This is the Big Show Podcast on TSN1290.ca.
Good morning, everybody, and welcome to the Big Show on TSN 1290 and TSN1290.ca. A little breezy, a little cool Thursday morning for you here in Winnipeg, Manitoba, Canada. Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, Brandon Rewicki with you, and a jam-packed show to get to. Lots of CFL news happening yesterday. Cleveland Indians are on a heater, and it's a record-setting one. We'll touch on that a little bit. The Flames want a new arena, and so does the city, and yet they cannot seem to agree. We'll get into that as well. And interesting poll put out by ESPN reporter Emily Kaplan. She's going to join us, asking players what they would do to change. Brian Munns on Jets training camp. The schedule is out. He'll join us live today as well. Jeff Reinbold on the NFL. David Pagnotta on the NHL. And, of course, an hour of your phone calls and two chances to qualify for our hockey nights in Vegas. Gentlemen, how are we today?
Doing pretty good today, boys. It is a little cool, like you say, and that fall has snapped back from the last couple of days of bliss with the last few days of summer. Last night I was at a birthday party last night, boys. There's a different school division for the kids get today and tomorrow off. I was like, how is a birthday party Wednesday night on a school night? But I was there, and it was at one of those hotels that have a pool.
Wait a minute. School just started?
Yeah.
And some kids get
and
2 days
kids,
off
yeah,
and already.
This school, different school division get today and tomorrow off. And the party was at one of those pools for kids in a hotel with the water slide and all the rest of it. So you sit in there for a couple hours, and it is like a sweat lodge in there, right? You're just losing weight sitting there. And then the eyes get the burn because there's, you know, 30 kids in the pool, and they've got the chlorine cranked or whatever. It was quite a night. But, boy, the kids had a lot of fun. But you just sit there. All you do is you sit there and you melt. And you're right, when you don't have hair anymore and you're going down to the wood, and you can't hide it, right? Like when you have hair, you can kind of hide if you're sweating or uncomfortably warm, but not. I've been dabbing the forehead and all the rest of it. It's pretty funny.
That's hilarious.
Yeah, it's actually different than how my night went, but that's so cool.
Way different than mine as well, yes. Interesting. How was your night, Brandon?
Oh, it was good. Yeah, nothing too crazy. I was able to catch up on some MasterChef, which is always top of mind. Oh. So I'm able to get that down.
I know you watch that all the time, brother, but are you also nifty in the kitchen?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Oh, yeah. I cook every single day. I cook two meals a day. I usually don't eat breakfast.
Huh.
But I'll have a homemade lunch and homemade dinner.
Meow. Yeah.
A little wild mushroom and garlic crostini last night.
What? I don't even know what that is.
What? That's interesting. Breakfast is the most important meal of the day, I'm told.
Amanda's a lucky girl.
Yes, she
is. I tell her that every day.
And not just for the
cooking. Glad somebody else knows that.
I was at the Bodker Golf Tournament yesterday out at Pine Ridge. Yes. Thank you for having me. It was an outstanding time. Mr. Chris Walby was out there, of course. 18 holes of golf and then a lot of prizes to give away. As you know, everywhere Chris Walby goes, he holds court.
So I was hoping he would join us sometime this morning to talk about the CFL no more contact.
I would,
but I guess I can write that off now.
So I saw him, but it was on the tournament that it was. He had a little bit of contact with us. But he was always a couple holes away. And as the emails were coming in about the CFL, and that's what we're going to start right away, I remember looking over three fairways and thinking, I saw him pick up somebody's ball on his fairway and throw it back to the person who shanked it. And I thought, I wonder what Walby thinks of this no contact stuff.
He hates. He talks about it already at the reduced level that it was at. He would rail and rant about it often on the Manuk Dencher Bomber game day. Like, he hated where it's at previous to being eradicated.
Right.
So he'd be off the rails today.
So the Bodker Tournament's in support of Habitat for Humanity, which is a great cause. And I appreciate everybody who had us out there, and Scott Charbon and the whole crew that hosted it and put it on. And they have door prizes. So you buy like tickets to support like Mulligans and all that, and you put them in these door prizes like a social, and there's about 14 of them. And about six prizes in, one guy wins four of them, and all you hear is the big banged up, mangled claw of Walby hit the table.
Like he does in here all the time, not realizing it reverberates through the mics. Yeah.
This is because one guy, about six or seven prizes in, one guy was fortunate enough to win like four of them.
Oh, boy.
And after the fourth one, you hear the old, that's it, I'm out of here. This is, and stands up, of course, walking out. Hey, Jimmy, where's Westwood? Ah, good to see you. I'm out of here. This is bull. Yeah, congratulations to you. Whatever, it's fixed. Anyways, thanks for having me, everybody. Typical Walby. It was awesome. Always good to see Chris Walby. And thanks once again to Bodker and the great work they did on their tournament yesterday for Habitat for Humanity. But now, there's so much to get to with the CFL. Dave Naylor, all over the story that Johnny Manziel's representatives have, I guess, induced the clause that the Hamilton Tiger Cats either have to offer him a contract, sign him, or trade him.
It's the old number two or get off the pot clause.
Exactly, within 10 days. And apparently, it's not just started yesterday, so the window might be even shorter. But the big news of the day was the CFL and the CFLPA, the Labor Day Classic, the Riders and the Bombers shook hands on the field, entire rosters, prior to the game, and then the CFLPA put out a release saying this is to show the league and the fans that we're unified in player safety.
And it was kind of goofy because nobody knew what really
why they
were doing.
I didn't have a clue what they were doing, and then I'm like, well, what's your concern with player safety? I don't... So then this comes together where they announce that contact practices during the season will reduce risk of injury. So there's a ban on them. 21-week schedule will mean more rest and recuperation because they're adding another bye week into a 9-team league. Let's start there. Your thoughts on the no contact anymore at all? And I know the NFL apparently in the NFLPA says only 14 padded practices a season.
And the CFL takes it that much more now, right? Like after training camp, it's done. So, and everyone becomes kickers except for one day a week. The extra bye week, I suppose the guys will like, but that's another week you don't get paid. But I guess you get paid over a further period of time now. So that's no big deal. But maybe for fans, it kind of sucks ducks a little bit just because there's always that interruption. But the no pads, no more padded full practice or full contact practices, all the old school guys I got and fans, I probably like a combination between text to me and tweets talking to me about it, the 30-ish, and every single one of them thinks that whether it's ex-players or fans of the game, thinks that the product, the on-field products, is going to hurt because of this. And I don't know necessarily for sure if that's what's going to happen. It is, if you were to take a map, though, and sort of bring along, say, from 10 years ago to where the sport is right now, boy, has it ever changed a lot, huh? Or like just hitting has changed so much, the window's gotten so small, and now practices, because of everyone's aware of the risk involved, the damage involved, now there's no more contact during practice. Like, it's, where is this going to be in 10 years is what I wonder. But you wonder, like you also wonder, when you bring a guy in, let's say mid-season, you bring a guy in as a D lineman or something, a place where there's all kinds of physicality and such, where you'd like to use one-on-ones to sort of measure and see where he's at. You don't really have that option anymore. So getting to know your players or understanding what they have in an overall game sense, sort of a situation, that's going to diminish. So I think it's going to be harder to evaluate players, except for on game day. And then also keeping those types of skills sharp, right? We always hear when the Bombers have a game, if they have poor tackling, we'll hear that discussed. Chris brings it up in a hurry where, you know, guys aren't able to practice anymore. Well, I know that's an excuse that's sometimes put on a team that doesn't tackle well, but they're playing against a team who did tackle well in that game, who is working within the same confines and structure of the limited hitting. So I don't know if it's going to affect guys or not. You would think it would to some degree, but ultimately we see now in contact sports most decisions err on the side of player safety, and it's real. This is really like a pioneer type move here by Randy Ambrosio and the CFL, ultimately going out of their way to make sure that they protect their players as best they can.
Do you like it?
Well, yeah, I don't have a – certainly I don't have a problem with it, and I'm not going to sit here. Like, I watched those guys. I remember just every day of my life for 18 years, I would basically watch those guys and marvel. Like, it was just brutal. And when those guys would line up on the line of scrimmage, and even on the days that it wasn't full go, like as far as one-on-ones and stuff like that, every single day those – and back in the days of the Cal Murphy, like the early 90s when I was playing – the pads are on every day. If you had a day without pads, it was a shocker, right? Like, it was a huge treat. Guys would be basically throwing little parties before practice if we didn't have to put the pads on. But when they, like, so back then, you'd watch, man, and it was like every single drill that they were doing, just the snap of the ball, slap, slap, smack, like the amount of jarring shots sustained. And you see some of the reports now in the numbers when it's like in the thousands for a week sort of thing in the life of an NFL or CFL player. It's crazy. So from that standpoint, for sure, I like it. I'm not so sure that it's, you know, so long as you have an evil and level playing field and everybody is working within that same sort of competitive field, then I'm okay, I think, with whatever effect it might have on the game, if there is an effect on the game. But ultimately, because of the additional focus and understanding where the sport is, I do think I like it.
Do you like it?
Yeah, yeah. I really don't know why you wouldn't like it, to be honest. Just because, I mean, fan-wise, to me, it would make absolutely no sense to hate this move. It's relative
to
every...
What if fans don't think, though, that it's... It seems to me, Wicks, that people think product is going to fall now.
Well, that's the thing. Like, I agree with your argument that if one team's tackling the other one isn't, you know, they both are under the same stipulations of how you can practice it. But tackling is like anything else in sports. Whatever you practice, you're going to get better at.
I don't really buy that. It's not like there's a new innovative way to tackle. Everybody knows, like every football player since the age of 8 knows how to tackle. You've done it your whole life. Nothing changes in that regard. Now you're just eliminating, I don't know what the percentage would be, but X amount of wear and tear on your body. Yeah. Like to keep these guys fresh to me is way more important than, I guess, refining the basics of tackling. Like I would rather have... You know, I would rather have a defense full of fresh bodies that are able to run out there and move at full speed and have no physical limitations than maybe getting, I don't know, 10, 15 extra shots at somebody in practice. To me, that's worth the missed contact.
And to me, it's not even like it's – the tackling isn't the worst part of the contact to me in watching all those years on the trenches. Like, it's the snap of the ball and the smash back. Like, that right off of there is something – that's a part of the contact that isn't talked about a lot. People always talk about the quarterback and the headshots and all the rest. But if you're in the trenches, every single time that ball is snapped, there is some level of head contact. You know, whether it's the helmets coming together or a hand up so it's too high, all those sorts of things, whether it's the force of the body coming in, all that sort of thing. So all of that contact, for that to go away and disappear, holy cow, is that like life is literally, you wake up as an old lineman or D lineman today in the CFL and your life has profoundly changed.
Yeah, I remember just being on a sideline when I first came to town for Bombers, and I remember covering the WHL, and one of the coaches played for the Islanders back in the day, and he was telling these great stories about how the Islanders or some of the players heard that the New York Jets trainer was the best trainer in the city. And so they would all – it started so that the Jets trainer would start getting Islanders and Rangers and New York Yankees players showing up to just get something, you know, worked on or checked out. And he goes, so we got to know the guy and he gave us passes. And he said standing on that sideline during a game, no matter who the Jets were playing, and watching that O-line like literally 15 feet from you and D-line – it's a car accident. Mm-hmm. And so when I came to town, I did the same thing at a practice and a game. I just went down to the sidelines for a half. And that line of scrimmage is a car accident. So, like, it is brutal.
And
play after play,
game, right?
Snap yeah. after yeah. snap, 60 offensive plays a game and the defensive line. I just don't know, like, it's still football. And I do lean a little bit to the fact that I think it does help to practice it. I think that, you know, even in my limited time playing, you know, little high school football, that whenever we had trouble, we would have, you know, coach would get mad.
Back to the basics,
after
right?
2 weeks and go, this is all we're doing. And they called it the slaughter box or whatever. And it did improve your tackling. It did help you get back into the fundamentals. And I do believe it's a fundamental of football. But player safety is what it is. And I guess when I heard that the NFL only allows 14 contact practices a season, I'm like, well, 14 down to none.
The CFL was 17 prior to this.
17, eh? Yeah. So we'll ask you on the Boss Pizza fan line what you think about it. We're still going to talk about this Johnny Manziel stuff. And by the way, Drew Edwards from the Hamilton Spectator and, of course, Scratching Post and 3downnation.com just tweeted out, respect to friends at CFL and TSN, but the story they posted 13 hours ago is factually incorrect. The Tiger Cats do not have to release or trade Manziel. Mm. So apparently that part of the story isn't factual. They just have been given a window to sign him, but they don't have to trade him. Apparently, they just lose him then, so he can go seek another opportunity somewhere else. So that's from Drew Edwards. We'll follow that as well. Up next, we talk the record that Cleveland set in the Major Leagues of Baseball on The Big Show, TSN 1290.
This is The Big Show Podcast on TSN1290.ca. Catch The Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Rewicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.
Back on The Big Show, 22 minutes past the hour. Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, Brandon Rewicki. A little chilly out. Make sure you... Well, I got shorts on, but you can still wear a light coat. See how the day goes. It's supposed to be nice. Get some rain prior to the weekend, either today or tomorrow. Lots more to come on the CFL. Anthony Calvillo. And you know what? I just want to touch on this quickly. And I'll let you guys respond on it later when we get into it more. But Calvillo having to miss his Hall of Fame induction ceremony today with his family in from California because the Alouettes did what they did yesterday or couldn't wait one more day or whatever is...
Well, you can't wait one more day when you play for Sunday, man.
Well, now he's the OC and he's got a game to do. They fully knew that he had to, like, they can't go, we'll figure out the OC for Thursday while you go to this ceremony.
No, you can't give a, if you are, you got a new OC now, and you play Sunday. So you know, Saturday is the walkthrough. You got Friday to practice and today to practice. You can't give a day away.
Well, then that's my point. Like, this is, how disrespectful is that to
him? It's him, man. He's football.
It's not like this was a month ago, and then he goes, okay, well, I'm the OC now, so I won't be able to attend, and hence I won't have my family fly up from California, hence I won't have...
I'm sure they'll cover the cost of that for him. I don't think it's disrespectful, for Pete's sake. You can't put AC going into the Hall of Fame in front of your team. The team takes precedent. AC knows that.
Yeah, I don't know. I might put this more on the CFL for having a Hall of Fame ceremony kind of in the middle of it. Like, a lot of these guys are coaches. You know, like, it's kind of fortunate for the Bombers that they're on the bye week and Mike O'Shea can go there, or else what are the chances he can... You know what I mean? Like, it's...
Oh, you'd
no,
out,
no other league does that. The NFL does it, I think, week one of the preseason, where they have the Hall of Fame game. For me, if you're the CFL, do this to start the year or some other time, but to do it middle of the season, you're kind of... You're setting yourself up for a situation like this.
Yeah. I think you find a way to let him go, given the fact that you literally changed his plans yesterday.
I think you're crazy.
You're
talking about a team desperate for wins, one like 3 points out of top spot in the East with a new OC. You can't.
I'm not saying you don't fire them yesterday. If that's how it plays out. Like, if that's the thing that happens. But I don't see why they don't sit there and go, you know. And if he respectfully goes, thanks, I appreciate it because my family's here and stuff, but I'm staying. I got a lot of work to do.
That's what he would say anyway.
I don't know. I don't know about that.
Guarantee it.
I guarantee you his mother wouldn't say that, who said, I just flew up from California to watch this, and now I'm just going to sit in your house and not watch it. Nice to see you, though, son. The Cleveland Indians have won 21 games in a row. They did it yesterday. And have set an American League record. They become just the third team, because we're not going to include that tie, are we?
Well, actually, the tie's been explained, where they had to stop playing because they didn't have lights at the game. And so it was just declared sort of a pause, and then the next day they played the game in its entirety. So it's not really a
They didn't
a
go like 24-1-1 or so, you know.
So it's not a tie then.
No, they had to sort of, because they just ran out of daylight without lights, so they had to play the next day. So... Elias has come on and explained that, and everyone that was critical of it at this point in time has sort of said, okay, we take a step back. Elias is correct on this, and now that is, everyone's looking back at that number.
The third team in the majors then to do it in 101 years, or wait a minute, sorry, set American League record to join only other two teams in the past 101 years. So they're the third team in the past 101 years to do it, and they continue to roll. How great is this right now? Like, I mean, obviously it's a record. We've been following it. It's exciting for baseball, but where does this stand out for you in this point of the season?
Like, where does it rate with me for records sort of thing?
Yeah, like 10 years from now, are you going to go, I remember watching Cleveland win 21 games in a row, or if they go on to 22? Like, or is it just like, this is a cool record, interesting?
Yeah, well, it would
mean... Because this is historic.
It would mean much more to... Just, I guess, because I don't follow baseball the way I follow hockey or football. So it's not going to be like... And it's not the Blue Jays. Like, it was the Blue Jays that would have been locked into this a number of games ago with Cleveland. I'm just, as each day goes by, keeping track and up to date and seeing that they win another and getting the run diff and how few runs have been scored against them, yada, yada, with all that sort of stuff. So it's... I understand it's causing quite a fervor within the baseball world, but for me, it's going to be just a little bit of a blip on the screen.
Some parents kept their kids home from school and brought them to Progressive Field, or literally admitted they sat at home and watched it to see, let their children see baseball.
I would believe that if you're
history.
From Cleveland, right?
Yeah. And they should. But I don't know. I'll be honest. I remember the Oakland A's streak more than this one. I remember watching those games more than I've watched Cleveland ones.
Like, is it because Cleveland's really good and
yeah,
we know
so.
This?
I think
Oakland
so.
Just wasn't. And
when Oakland was doing it was like, how is this happening? Like, this shouldn't happen. You can name Miguel Tejada, and that's about it. And they were just reeling off win after win, whereas with Cleveland, not that it's expected, but if before the season started, somebody came up to you and said, hey, an AL team's going to reel off 21, you go, yeah, but probably Cleveland, I bet.
David Justice, I'm not paying you $7 million. The New York Yankees are paying you $4 to not play for them. You might want to fall in line.
Exactly.
Yes. Damn, Brad Pitt's good looking. Anyway, who plays Terry Francona? Maybe we'll talk about that later, like the ladies on SportsCenter were. We'll get into the Brian Burke interview with Jay and Dan yesterday, and Jets training camp schedule's out. That's next on The Big Show, TSN 1290.
This is the Big Show podcast on TSN1290.ca. Catch the Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruwicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.
TSN 1290 is proud to support the fifth and final HSC Foundation Celebrity Human Race. It's your chance to race around Winnipeg, competing in challenges and puzzles with your team's celebrities September 22nd and 23rd. The money raised allows the HSC Foundation to improve care for Manitoba families with things like state-of-the-art facilities, cutting-edge medical equipment, and research initiatives. To learn more or to register, visit TSN1290.ca. Jim Tilth, Troy Westwood, Brandon Ruwicki with you. And it's 34 minutes past the opening hour here on The Big Show, TSN 1290. We're going to delve into the Johnny Manziel stuff and some more NFL action as Week 2 gets started tonight in our next segment. Plenty to come in the Royal Sports Power Hour, and of course your chance to qualify twice today on The Big Show for our hockey nights in Vegas. The Calgary Flames announcing yesterday that they would no longer pursue a new arena deal with the city. And basically threatened who knows what'll happen now. Calgary Mayor Naheed Nenshi took his turn in front of the microphones on Wednesday, stating the city has a fair offer on the table, and I think one that most Calgarians, will see as eminently reasonable. And there's another offer on the table that I think most Calgarians will see as unreasonable. The city council, in response to King's surprise snipe, voted 8-4. Ken King, by the way, is the Calgary Flames president, voted 8-4 on Wednesday to release the details of its proposal. The politicians, however, did not decide when to roll that information out. Mr. Brian Burke of the Calgary Flames sat in with Jay and Dan, who are back on TSN, of course, since the beginning of September. Here's what Brian Burke had to say with Jay and Dan on TSN yesterday.
In honor, Brian. We did not tie our ties and gently laid them across our necks.
When did that start? Why did you start that?
I used to go into work when I was an assistant GM at 6 in the morning. So in Vancouver, we were open when the Boston Bruins were open at 9 o'clock Eastern time. We were open for business. So I'd go in jeans and a T-shirt, and about 8:30, Pat would come in around 7, and we'd spend some time, and then at around 8:30, I'd go downstairs, work out, put on a suit, and come up with a tie untied, and then I'd tie it whenever I had to, sometimes not till game time, and then ultimately, when I realized it annoyed people, I just stopped tying it.
Yeah. We actually learned how to tie a tie from an app. You've got an app. It's called the Burke Knot. So
two steps. It's a two-step process, really.
Okay. We got to dive in. The arena. You said if a deal can't be reached on a new building to replace the Saddle Dome, the Flames are going to move. So the deal, it's said to be dead. The franchise, are they preparing to leave Calgary?
No. And first off, let's go back to what I said. I got sucked in there. You know, a guy my age shouldn't get sucked in. But I gave a speech at luncheon, and I got jumped on at the end by someone I believe was planted. But I said something I wish I could take back. 30 years of this business, very few things I wish I could take back. That's one. That's not what we're preparing to do. Ken King spoke to this today, and I think the fewer voices that speak, the more chance you have to have clarity. Fact is, right now, there's no negotiations going on for a new building. That doesn't mean, and it certainly isn't the case at this time, that the Flames are preparing to leave.
Okay.
We saw a similar situation play out with the Oilers. Daryl Cates goes and tours a sort of a dilapidated Key Arena, comes back, apologizes. They get back to the bargaining table. Yesterday, the city of Seattle announces that Key Arena is going to be refurnished and refurbished, and it's going to look good again. Ken makes that announcement. You can't help but make a connection there, Brian. Is there a chance that this is just another step toward the bargaining process?
Well, I think if we're that sophisticated, then we deserve a lot of credit. If we could schedule a meeting that was scheduled probably a month ago, you don't get the Commissioner Bettman to come in and speak with your owners by asking him to come the day before. We could have coordinated that with Seattle when they independently set their date. Then we're a lot more sophisticated than I think we are. No, it's a coincidence, and it shouldn't be read as anything other than a coincidence. From my perspective, that didn't even occur to me.
Right.
Till you just asked that question, that the fact they occurred the same day.
Right.
Saddle Dome, iconic building. You can't think of Calgary without thinking of it, but it's an old barn. How many years is left in this baby?
Well, its past due date is long gone. Best before was 15 years ago, probably. This building was built in 1983. It was state of the art. This is something everyone in Calgary agrees on. And we need a new building. So you're looking at the best building that was built in 1983 and has been under 12 feet of water. So
yeah.
You
have to remember that, yeah.
It'll be the oldest building in the league when Detroit opens in the fall. I'm not sure where the Islanders will end up. It'll be the oldest building in the league by 10 or 15 years. So,
but the beer is so good in there.
I couldn't tell you.
I know. It's those lines. There's something in the beer lines.
Yeah, there's something about them. You're a Harvard guy. Mayor Nenshi's a Harvard guy. Can we not get you to put on those crimson sweaters, get into a room, and just hammer out a deal in like 2 hours?
I am a Providence College guy. I played at Providence College. That's my alma mater. I also happened to attend Harvard Law School, but if you ask me where I went to school, I went to Providence College, so I don't think we're going to be able to play that card anytime soon.
Are we really that far apart? Like what Mayor Nenshi is proposing and what you guys originally proposed? I know they're on opposite sides of the city. Is there not a middle ground somewhere, though?
I couldn't tell you. I can tell you that from our perspective, what I'm informed of, and again, we don't want our hockey operations people fighting this fight. We got a season to play.
Right.
We don't want Brian Burke and Brad Tre living on this front line. So this is not our area of expertise. And I'll leave an answer to that question, how far apart are we? I would leave that to Ken.
Okay.
What's your message you can send right now to Flames fans?
The message is exactly what was said yesterday, which is at this point there are no discussions going forward in terms of a new building. That's all.
Okay. Let's talk about the 2018 Olympics. NHLers, they are not going to Pyeongchang. The players, they want to go despite the two-week break in the NHL schedule, which is tough as a business owner to shut your business down for 2 weeks. But you need that global exposure, don't you?
Well, let's step back. You say the players want to go. I was a member of the negotiating team when we did the last collective bargaining agreement. And it was suggested to the NHLPA at that point, why don't we separate these two things? Why don't we take the international hockey schedule out of collective bargaining so that even if we're in a lockout or strike position, an Olympic Games could continue,
right.
World Cups could continue. Let's isolate them. Let's separate them. And the NHLPA refused to do that. I was sitting there. So the notion now that players say, geez, we really want to go. They had a chance to go. They had a chance to say, we're going to remove the ability of the NHL to make this decision. We're going to take that out of their hands. So it's disingenuous, if not worse, if not dishonest, for players now to say, oh, we really want to go. They had a chance to take that. That being said, I'm an Olympics guy. I think we should go to every Olympics. That being said, this one was easy. No charters, no insurance on the players. You know, one thing, we went to Sochi. The Sochi Olympic people guaranteed all the players' contracts. And we had a serious injury in Sochi.
Right.
We've had a serious injury at every Olympics. Mattias Holm got badly hurt in Torino. So this insurance on the players' contract, players we pay, players whose rights we own, yeah, kind of important. So, and the charters to get guys over there and not fly commercial. So that this one was easy to say no to.
Beijing. Seems like an incredible audience, a global audience, and then that, you know, the hockey's, the game's actually growing over there. You've got to be there, don't you?
Well, again, as a GM, if my players aren't insured, I'm not the GM.
Right.
But as the president of hockey operator, if my players aren't insured, no, I don't have to be anywhere. My number one priority always is my fans, my season ticket holders. And if I can insure my players and make sure that there's not some costly consequence of going, great. But they're my number one priority. Growing the game, yes, that's a priority. Do we have to be there? If certain conditions are met, I think the NHL should be at the Olympics, yes.
Brian, you're always kind with your time. I worked in Vancouver before working at TSN. I remember walking by you in the bowels of the arena, and you said, O'Toole, and I turned around. I said, yeah, I said, I hear you're leaving. I said, yeah, he said, good, and you just kept walking. So thanks for that.
Well, you always warm and fuzzy with the media.
What a beauty, huh?
I don't know what I take. This is the Big Show on TSN 1290. That was Brian Burke, president of hockey operations with the Flames, on with Jay and Dan. I don't know what I take more out of that. The actual reasoning why he doesn't tie his tie, the whole Olympics thing, or the arena. But the new facility in Calgary, according to sources, would cost around $500 million. And reportedly, sources say, in a Globe and Mail piece, that the Flames have asked the city to cover one third of that.
Yeah, and I think you had it bang on yesterday when you first introduced the tie-in with the election and all the rest of it. This is going to be something where there's going to be threats unleashed, as we've already heard, and the back and forth. Just prepare for it emotionally and expect it all to come out fine and dandy with the Flames getting a building built in Calgary. Is sort of the way I would approach it as a fan of the game or as a fan of the Flames. And I'm right with you. Like, listening to the story, the tie thing is super. The Canada wonders about that. And that's as much as I've ever heard about that whole tie thing. And then the Olympics thing is pretty interesting as well, isn't it? Where the players had the opportunity possibly to. And of course, this is the other side of the table talking. But that whole Olympics thing, it's still real messy, and you wonder going forward where all that's going to get to.
Yeah, and I get the whole you want the contracts guaranteed and that sort of thing, but the NHL had no problem with injury concerns of the World Cup because they were getting a piece of the pie, and they're not getting that in the Olympics, so that's why they're not going. So it's kind of like the Bettman thing yesterday in a way. Like, don't feed me this crap about you're worried about player safety, because for the majority of it, you're not. It's the fact that the owners can make a lot of money off of this thing. So if they can't make money off it, to them, it's not worth going. It's not about growing the game. If it doesn't help them out financially, then they're not willing to essentially do the fans a favor here.
I think, though, it's fair to say GMs, coaches would be very concerned all the time for such things, whether it's the World Cup, what's putting money in the pockets of the owners and the players, or if it's the Olympics, they're for sure always going to be very concerned about the health and well-being of their players.
I was going to say that, to play devil's advocate to that, those are your assets.
Oh, yeah.
Like, it's business.
That's who's going to help you hoist a cup.
If my assets are protected, then fine.
Yeah.
But if my assets aren't going to be protected and I risk having to pay somebody $8 million a year like John Tavares and not have him,
even if they are protected, it doesn't help you for that season, like what happened to the Islanders that year, right?
Yeah, I mean, the on-ice stuff for sure, but I mean, you're still going to pay, like it's the insurance part. I think that's a big part of it. I wonder if, like the World Cup, like the last Olympics, if the insurance part of it was covered.
I thought IOC came out and said that was taken care of. I think that was, as things marched forward, I think the IOC came forward and stepped up to take care of the insurance and such.
I'm pretty sure,
man. Pretty sure.
Because are they going to pay? Did they pay John Tavares' contract when he got hurt?
Well, the last time they did,
yeah, it was
that's what he was. That's what he was talking about.
And I know that was a sticky point early on in this whole thing, but IOC stepped up and said they would take care of that as well. So that's just a bunch of horse crap. But for GMs and coaches, man, you don't want to lose any players in the middle of your season, for Pete's sake. That'd be a constant concern.
That bothers me even more. Why is the IOC covering a $1 million contract just to get somebody there? Like, if a sprinter breaks his leg, are they covering that person's? Do you know what I mean? Like, why is the IOC taking care of NHL players' contracts just to get them there?
Well, because a sprinter's not owned, right,
quote
or
unquote,
under
yeah.
contract by anybody. So it's a different sort of relationship.
That's interesting. What do you guys think of the deal then, and what Brian Burke had to say there? Or you just think it's going to get done, as
do? I think there's going to be heartstrings back and forth. People are going to possibly shed tears or become too emotionally involved to something that ultimately will be resolved in time.
It would be beyond shocking to see the Flames, especially because what hockey market that doesn't have a team is better than Calgary? That there's one that it doesn't exist right now. Yeah. You have a city of over 1 million people. I mean, I know the arena is an issue, but when you look at the market and the people and the fact that they, I don't know if they sell out every single game, but it's, I would say, well above 90% full capacity every single night in a hockey crazed market. You would be beyond crazy to move the team out of there because you'd be cutting losses at that point when you have four or five other franchises in your league that would give anything to have Calgary's situation right now.
Yeah, I don't think they're moving at all. And I think, as I said, once the deal is done, they will move on. I guess back to the Olympics and the negotiation and all that, that is, where do you guys sit on that right now?
Well,
because they're both going to blame each other.
I'm going to put the vast majority on the owners for sure. And especially because Gary Bettman certainly implied that had the players been able to, you know, just give another year on their CBA, I think it was toss another year onto it, that the owners could be sort of wrestled into allowing it to go. And Brian Burke there says that, yeah, there's some responsibility on our shoulders here to grow the game, right? Like, I just think when you hold, it's such a sacred thing the owners of the NHL hold in good faith and good trust for us as those who love the game, to take away the Olympics, not just from us, but also your players. And it's just such a monumental event. It makes me sick that the owners took the stance that they did. Didn't make it happen.
Yeah, I still maintain that they're being incredibly short-sighted in all of this, where you have a market, a cold weather market at that, where if you want to include South Korea and China, of over 1 billion people. 1 billion people who have essentially never seen your sport. And you have a chance to showcase it in the highest fashion, and you don't jump on that opportunity. I think it's a big, big mistake by the NHL.
I like how he's throwing out the chartered flight stuff, when in reality you have a 3-week window to go to China and back. Like, I get what you're saying, but it's not Salt Lake City. It's not like you can get on a plane in New York or Calgary and get to Salt Lake City on a commercial flight on one hop. It's like, what do you want to fly commercial, make a layover, and then have these guys come back and continue with the NHL regular season? It's all the intricacies of the decision and everywhere it went is sort of interesting to me on how they throw out those little things about each other. We'll take a break here on The Big Show, TSN 1290, and when we come back, we'll get back into some football, the CFL, and of course, NFL Thursday night starts week 2 tonight. On The Big Show next, TSN 1290.
This is The Big Show podcast on TSN1290.ca. Catch The Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Rewicki, weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.
Welcome back to The Big Show on TSN 1290, TSN1290.ca. The Winnipeg Jets put out their training camp schedule. We'll delve into that in the next hour. First, on-ice testing. Group A, 10 a.m. tomorrow morning out at Bell MTS Iceplex. The second group on the ice will be at noon Saturday for FanFest. Group 1 is on the ice at 9 a.m. There's an off-ice workout at 10:45 and then on the ice again at noon. And same for Sunday, on ice at 9 a.m. and noon out at Bell MTS Iceplex. The Big Show will be out there live tomorrow from 6 till 11 a.m., live right up until 11 to help kick off training camp and, of course, FanFest for the Winnipeg Jets. Paul Maurice is going to stop by. The new Winnipeg Jets insider, Jamie Thomas, is going to be on the program. Craig Heisinger might stop by as well. We've got a lot of guests out there, so we'll be live at Bell MTS Iceplex with the Big Show. Tomorrow we'll delve into the schedule, or tomorrow starting at 6 a.m. we'll delve into the schedule and the roster a little bit in the next hour of the Royal Sports Power Hour. Back to football tonight, guys.
Do you know that we were invited to take part in the combine, some of the drills?
Come on, were
just
we really?
Just planting the seed with you. I told her I would talk to you about it. Yeah.
I got to stretch my hammies. Yeah. I'm worried about my hammies in the Doug Brown competition. Uh-huh. Ran a 7:40.
That's the only body part I have not hurt. That's it.
Is your hammies?
The hammy. The hammies have been saved so far.
They suck when you do hurt them, man.
I'm 6'4", and I've had a doctor say, he goes, you have really short muscles. That's why you constantly pull hammies and quads. I said, really? It's not the extra 40 pounds?
Yeah.
It's like, well, that too. But interesting. Would you do that?
I don't know. I don't know. Maybe. Doing something like that half-assing it is no real fun. If you're doing it for something as a competitive nature, that would be fun. But I'm 50, you're however old, and we're going to go over and be
108.
Like, what are we going to bring to the table kind of messing around just trying these things? I don't know. Maybe.
Yeah. And that's the interesting thing when Doug Brown has the Kids Sport Media Challenge doing football activities. Like, it's interesting to go against each other, but I think the fascinating part would be, like, to do a drill and then compare it to the...
That's what they're saying they would do, compare it to what the pros are doing.
Yeah.
So just, yeah, and you know dang well how that's going to turn out when you're talking about elite 20-something-year-old athletes.
Yes.
Why are you looking at me when you say that?
I was winking.
Okay.
Johnny Manziel. Is he coming to the CFL and where? Why is he doing this?
I thought you were talking NFL tonight.
Well, I am, but okay, we'll talk Manziel later. NFL tonight, Houston is in Cincinnati. Who do you like?
Well, one of these two teams is going to be 0-2, and they just both lost. Houston lost at home 29-7. Since he lost at home 20-0. You're talking about playing Sunday. You go Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, you're playing. That is insane, right? That's always insane. But the emphasis, and even maybe more so on Houston, where Brian Cushing, they just lost Cushing for 10 games because of PED suspension. And you're also sitting down Tom Savage. You saw enough after about 30 snaps with him. And go, okay, that's enough. You're done. You're on the sideline. And you're going to start Deshaun Watson now after and the four-day prep thing. So I look at this game, guys, and Cincinnati was absolutely humiliated offensively in that 20-0 loss to Baltimore, but at least they're at home. All right, you're looking at the situation with Houston, and you got the short week that we know devastates team. Every Thursday, pretty much the traveling team is in all kinds of trouble. Throw into that, you just lost Cushing, and now Deshaun Watson is your starting quarterback. They might not score a point tonight. There is, I say, book it, zero chance Houston wins this game.
I mean, I get where you're going with that, but it's not like Cincinnati and Andy Dalton have this tremendous home record in prime time under the lights.
That's
what I thought when I took them against Baltimore. Who do I like in this one? The under. That's it. There are no winners. Whoever wins the game is not a winner. You're 1-1, and it's an inevitable march to a 6-10, 7-9 season. I'm so out. I picked Houston. I for some reason, but maybe it was a fairy tale story with everything going on in Texas. But both of these teams are going nowhere this season. No winner tonight. Tie. It's a tie.
I like Houston's D, but I have no clue tonight.
Since he's favored by 6.5. And yeah. it's because Houston is traveling, and that
with
whole
the,
like
the
short
kid.
Week yeah. and losing Cushing, and you got Deshaun. Like I don't, if the defense can score 14 points, Houston has a chance.
Thursday nighter tonight, on Houston at Cincinnati. I don't know who I'm taking with, so I'll think about it. Emily Kaplan, ESPN hockey reporter, is going to join us next at the top of the Royal Sports Power Hour on TSN 1290.
This is the Big Show podcast on TSN1290.ca. Catch the Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruwicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.
TSN 1290 and Not AutoCorp present the Blue Bus. Before every Winnipeg Blue Bombers home game this season, we're taking W fans to Investors Group Field in our Not AutoCorp VIP Blue Bus. We'll pick you and five buddies up from a starting destination, drive you to the game, and when it's done, we'll take you back to wherever you started. Prize includes six tickets to an upcoming Blue Bombers home game and free transportation to and from. Enter to win now at TSN1290.ca. And the next game, of course, Friday, September 22nd, when the Bombers host Drew Tate and the Ottawa Red Blacks. Make sure you get in at TSN1290.ca for the Not AutoCorp Blue Bus. And we'll see if we can get you to and from the game with five of your closest and dearest friends in your life. This is the Big Show on TSN 1290 and TSN1290.ca. Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruwicki with you on the Royal Sports Power Hour. Brian Munns is going to tee up Winnipeg Jets training camp, which has their first on-ice session tomorrow morning at 9 a.m. at Bell MTS Iceplex. He'll join us at 7:30. NHL news and notes to come up in this hour as well, and your chance to qualify, as we will qualify another lucky listener for our hockey nights in Vegas, as we're sending five people and their guests to Las Vegas for the Jets taking on the Golden Knights at the T-Mobile Arena. That's all to come in the Royal Sports Power Hour. But right now, we just mentioned this as we were leaving the air yesterday with our program, that Emily Kaplan, ESPN hockey reporter, put out a great article on asking 29 different NHL players to play commissioner in the NHL if they could change one rule. And Emily joins us now. Emily, how are you?
How are you?
Good, thank you. How much fun was this piece for you to do?
It was fun. I think one of the things that I like most about covering the NHL, and I will be totally candid with you, for the last 5 years I covered the NFL, and this is my first season, but it's just kind of how open these guys are. And, you know, we left this totally open-ended. I just wanted to see what the answers were. And if you read the piece, you will see they're kind of all over the place, and a lot of them, the guys got creative.
We were listening to a piece, Brian Burke, talk about the other side of the table for the Olympics, but that's one issue. The players, it just kills them, as it does the fans, that they're not going to the Olympics this year.
Yeah, it really does, and it's really a universal sentiment. One of the more interesting comments I thought what I found was from Alexander Tanev, who is a defenseman for the Canucks, and said, look, I probably wouldn't even be on the team. I just know that it's so important to guys.
Yeah, that's the one that I was just going to mention. He's a former Manitoba Moose player, did some time here in Winnipeg before joining the Canucks, and his brother plays here, Brandon, and Chris saying, let's go to the Olympics. I wouldn't be on the team, but I'm sure a lot of the guys would like to be there. That's pretty,
yeah, sorry.
That's a hockey player right there, actually.
Totally, and I butchered his name, which is terrible, but yeah, totally a hockey player move, and look, I think it's one of those things where the league might read this and say, you know, it's ridiculous that the players think it's so simple, it's so complicated, there's so many factors at play. But it really comes down to optics for these guys. And when you grow up when you're a player, you think of two things. You think of winning a Stanley Cup, and you think of wearing, you know, the jersey of your country and winning an Olympic gold. And just to be denied that for reasons that they can't quite understand, it just kind of seems silly.
Emily, it is real neat listening to the players, and you would think this would be a good idea for the NHL in a general sense to take maybe 10 players or 20 players from the league and just sort of have a brainstorming session each year as to how they could make the league a little bit better. And you see someone like Jack Eichel's response is no offside as a forward, saying that just hang down at the other end and wait for the puck to come there. So not maybe taking it as seriously as some fans would like, but then Connor McDavid with a very insightful and well-described situation where he's talking about how teams just trap right now and put the red line back in, put things into effect to allow the flow through to neutral zone to happen a little bit easier. And that would truly go a long way into making the game that much more enjoyable to watch.
Yeah, I think something in sports that's sometimes lost is discourse. And I think, you know, we look at the NHL, we see the player side and the league side sometimes being so far apart. And sometimes it's just one of those things where you just need to listen. And, you know, like I said earlier, I did cover the NFL. And one of the things that I think got Roger Goodell such goodwill with the league is at it was about a year ago, they were so far apart with penalties, well, penalty celebrations. Players really wanted to celebrate after penalties. The league just said, that's unreal. He actually brought in players for this little bit of a summit and just heard them out, and finally came up with a compromise. And it was just such a small gesture of goodwill, but it really went a long way. And I think that, you know, any league could benefit from something like that.
Emily, the thought, one of the things that frustrates me about the NHL is how a penalty in the first period is not in the third, and how a penalty in October is probably not going to be called in May when the playoffs are on. And it's interesting that the four players that talked about the refs, Patrick Kane, Braden Holtby, Jonathan Huberdeau, and Ryan McDonough, Huberdeau and Holtby both mentioned the same thing, is maybe some more, like Holtby said, maybe a little more consistency from how the game is called and played from regular season to playoffs. And Huberdeau saying the referees are way different than they are in the season. I don't think that in any other sport. In football, they're going to call something in the Super Bowl last second. In hockey, sometimes it's less penalties in the playoffs. It's interesting to hear the players reflect the same sort of issue about refereeing, that they too would like some consistency.
Players are just like us, right? It shows a little bit of humanity. But look, this is one of the things that I thought was probably the hardest to tangibly change, because it's such a fast-moving game and it really is hard to officiate. But when you hear them have these kind of sentiments, and I think Huberdeau and I think Holtby was the other guy, I believe it was Braden Holtby, who said, you know, it's just differently called in the playoffs in the regular season. That is something that, you know, it's a little easier to change. And it's saying, look, you know, don't be gun shy on your whistle. You know, try to just, you know, treat it like any other game. And I think that's, you know, easier said in theory than done in practice. But if you're hearing this sentiment, maybe, you know, we can look at some holistic changes and making sure that guys stay consistent, you know, the entire season and postseason.
Emily, here in Winnipeg, we have sort of a heightened interest in the Central, and certainly a lot of people talking about Dallas and the changes the team made. You recently had a sit down with Ben and Seguin. Please share a couple of thoughts from that.
Yeah, they had two definitely different personalities. Ben's a little more serious, and Seguin is a little out there, but they talked about, you know, the additions the team made, and each year, especially that Seguin has been there. You know, they've made some kind of splash in free agency, but nothing like this year. I mean, it's pretty incredible. And they were talking about how disappointed they were in last year. Seguin even went as far to say that hockey wasn't fun for him last year, which I thought was a pretty strong sentiment. But they understand the expectations around them when you go out and, you know, you go and you get your goalie, you go and you get Massot, you go and you get Radulov, and you just really improve your team. And I think they know that, you know, this is it, and they're going to go for it, and they're pumped about it.
Emily, as you said, you've been covering the NFL for 5 years, so I'm wondering if anything about your article with the 29 players stood out to you. What were you expecting, and did something surprise you from some of the players that you thought they mentioned, or did something not stick out to you that it went to status quo that you expected?
I think what surprised me, perhaps, is just how candid they were and how all over the map they were. And, you know, like you said, some guys really put a lot of thought into it. Connor McDavid, who, you know, this is the first time I ever got to meet him in person, and I found him to be pretty buttoned up. You know, when we asked him other questions, it was a little bit cookie cutter. It's kind of like, all right, you know, I've been here. I've done this media tour a couple different times now. Even though he's so young, he probably really has only done it twice. But then when he thought about this, he really had a thoughtful answer. And I think it's one of those things where, you know, when I covered the NFL, guys had no problem showing their personality at any point. And then the NHL, maybe inherently more of a team game, if you think about it, a star player really only plays a fourth of a game, so they're not used to talking about themselves. But when you ask them, they do want to talk, and they do love the game, and they do want to make the game better.
Emily, from your perspective as an American, for Las Vegas going from 0-2 with the Golden Knights and the Raiders, what are your thoughts on how that market's going to respond to it? And then also, you had a conversation with Marc-Andre Fleury, who kind of at this point in time is the face of the Golden Knights. And please let us into a little of the conversation that you had with him.
Yeah, Marc-Andre Fleury is funny. He's still the same old Marc-Andre Fleury. He just wants to win. I asked him how it felt that the owner and general manager said they don't expect to make the playoffs in 3 years. And he didn't like that at all. He's like, my contract only goes through 2 more years. I want to win now. So that was pretty interesting to me. But he was just so surprised by the fan reaction so far in Vegas. He even admitted he didn't know what to expect. And something I was able to do earlier in the summer is I actually boarded a caravan with the Vegas Knights, and they went off to places like Montana and Idaho and Utah, and those are places that you don't exactly think of when you think of the Vegas Golden Knights, but that's actually in their TV territory. So something I think that's interesting that their owner, Bill Foley, is doing is saying, look, we know that it might be tough to get people, you know, downtown on the Strip, but we're hedging our bets, and we actually cast a really wide net of people who are going to be Vegas Golden Knights fans, and I think that's going to help them be successful.
I'm talking with Emily Kaplan of ESPN, a hockey reporter. You can follow her on Twitter at Emily M. Kaplan. You also sat down with Erik Karlsson, who you had a piece of saying that basically he says the Sens are the most underrated team heading into this season. He's not going to be around at the start of the year. Tell us about your conversation with Karlsson and why he feels that way.
Yeah, it's funny. I asked all players that. It's a piece that's going to come up later, and he didn't even hesitate at all. He said, we are underrated, and I think when you look at all the Canadian teams, maybe this is, you know, it's kind of entering another golden age for Canadian hockey. You have, you know, probably at least 4, if not 5 of the teams, you know, serious playoff contenders and could make a run. And maybe, you know, the Senators, just because of the way they ended last year, people aren't quite talking about them. Everyone's so excited about the Oilers right now and the 2 extensions they got done. And the Maple Leafs and how young they are. And, you know, obviously the Canadians always have Carey Price. But Karlsson's like, look, don't forget about us. We're a pretty tough team to play. So he's not going to start the season as preseason, at least, as he kind of rehabs. But I expect him to play a majority of the season. And I do agree with him that they're still underrated.
You can read the article Emily put out at ESPN.com and all her articles at ESPN.com as well. The one specifically we were talking about, if asking 29 NHLers what rule they would change. Emily, great stuff. We appreciate your time. Enjoy the rest of your day.
All right. Thanks, guys.
Thanks so much, Emily.
What's the one rule you would change? If you could. We'll talk about that next.
I got a doozy.
You guys seem like you'd want to change 12.
Well, hey, man, dude, you're going to give me one single thing to pick. I'd have to give that some thought.
We will qualify somebody for our Hockey Nights in Vegas next, and we'll get the gentlemen's thoughts on the one rule they would change in the National Hockey League if they could. That's next on The Big Show, TSN 1290.
This is The Big Show Podcast on TSN1290.ca. Catch The Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Rewicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.
12th caller through as TSN 1290 presents Hockey Nights in Vegas will be our latest qualifier. We're sending 5 lucky listeners and their guests to Las Vegas this November, where they'll see the Winnipeg Jets take on the Vegas Golden Knights Friday, November 10th at T-Mobile Arena. We are going to supply 2 hockey tickets, return airfare to and from Las Vegas, 4 nights accommodations right on the Strip, and $1,290 in cash to help cover a few extras during your stay. Listen for your chance to qualify and win weekdays at 7:15 a.m., 8:15 a.m., 12:15 p.m., and 5:15 p.m., or watch for bonus chances to qualify online at TSN 1290 Radio and, of course, our TSN 1290 Facebook page. Winners will be announced Monday mornings on The Big Show, like Kevin Williams on this Monday, the September 11th, our first grand prize winner. We're also doing draws on Monday, September 25th and October 9th, October 23rd and November 6th. For more information, check out TSN1290.ca. Hockey Nights in Vegas. Go all in with us here at TSN 1290. Plenty of shows on the Strip to spend that cash on, or you can gamble, or you can just bring it home with you if you want.
Go take part in nature, man.
Nature.
And Colorado River, or go visit the Grand Canyon.
Have you ever been to the Hoover Dam? That's something I've actually always wanted to do, and I'm not a big, like...
That ain't nature, bruh. That's the stop.
Well, I know. Stopping nature. Harnessing nature.
Yeah, not man-made things I don't really care about.
You see, and I'm not a big, like, Grand Canyon or... generally, like, I get Mount Rushmore, all that, but I don't need to see it. But the Hoover Dam is something that I'd love to see. Just the size and the magnitude.
Don't get me started on Mount Rushmore, bruh.
Should be a bomber Mount Rushmore. Which 4 heads would be on the bomber Rushmore?
Yeah, we've had that discussion before.
Interesting. Who's our latest qualifier on Hockey Nights in Vegas, courtesy of us here at TSN 1290?
Well, Rob here said he harnessed the power of his favorite number, number 12, Yvonne Cornier.
Nice. Woo!
So the Roadrunner got Rob Calthorpe qualified today.
Rob Calthorpe and the Roadrunner. How are you?
I'm great. Thanks so much.
Attaboy, Thorpes.
Awesome. Have you ever been to Vegas?
We were just in Vegas, about nine of us, in June.
Wow.
And we really thought we'd see Jim there because we were there to see Tesla, Poison, and Def Leppard.
Oh. Wowzers.
Yeah!
He was there in spirit with you, man.
Tesla!
Exactly.
Love will find a way.
Great song. It's a great song.
How was it? How was the show?
It was, as far as I remember, it was great.
Was Bret Michaels all greasy and creepy?
He was, and apparently that isn't his real hair. That's a wig under his hat.
Stop it.
That's what I heard. That's what someone told me there.
Wow.
So that was really quite surprising.
He's a little Dwight Yoakam, maybe.
I think so, yeah.
Yeah. Wowzers.
Sorry, I just had to get back in my chair. I fell out of my chair.
He fainted, yeah.
You're telling me that Michaels takes off the do-rag, and it's just like a lid or a helmet?
That's what I heard.
Wow. Oh.
I know, it was shocking.
Is that a chin strap then? What are we doing here, Brett? Do the Mark Messier. Do you know who you'd take if you're one of our grand prize winners?
Definitely have to be the wife, for sure.
Obviously,
yeah,
nice.
Obviously.
Excellent. Did she go with you to the Tesla concert?
She was one of the ones there, yeah.
Yeah, because love will find a way, Rob.
She was causing all the problems.
So you think that it's over, but love will find a way.
It will.
What would you do with the $1,290 cash? Would you go see another show? Would you go see I was in Vegas once, literally, walking down the strip, and this was after they broke up for the second time. And I just happened to look up, killing time before I left the next day. And the next day, it's like Sammy Hagar live in... And I'm like, what? And it was like $25. And I was like, what? And I'm like, how much would it cost to delay my flight?
Show to go to, for sure.
Yes. And my significant other at the time said, you can't pay enough to delay this flight. You'll be able to see him in Revelstoke, B.C. in about a year. And I was like, that's it. That's probably why that ended, to be honest with you.
Exactly.
But that's not about me, Rob. It's not about me. So congratulations just for qualifying today. You get a jet skier gift card, and best of luck. If you don't win on September 25th, our next grand prize draw, you're still in for the other three. And rock on, my man.
Sounds good.
Take care, man.
Good
luck.
Bye.
I get a kick out of
pull up a little Tesla.
I get a you quoting like entire verses from the song for Pete's sake. I get a kick when qualifiers say it would have to be the wife, right? Like there's a
like
I like, take the wife. It's like I'd have to.
It's like getting poked in the back with a poker. Yeah.
To be fair, you I understand like you'd have to take the wife, but maybe our qualifier yesterday who dropped the wife or girlfriend line and then said he was just kidding. I don't know how that's going to go.
He's probably still recovering from that right now, right?
Yeah.
And you just brought it up again, and so she's glaring at this very second.
I could very well see if he is one of our grand prize winners from yesterday that there'll be a call saying, can the wife just go with her friend? Because I'm in a lot of trouble here. And,
Well,
we'll see how that plays out. Congratulations to Rob Calthorpe, our latest qualifier here on The Big Show. And he gets a Jets Gear gift card. We'll do it again next hour. And Kevin Olszewski and Hustler and Rick Ralph have your opportunity on the afternoon ride. Tesla, Def Leppard, and Poison. Who opens? Definitely not Poison, because apparently Bret Michaels has to put the chin strap on.
I would think Tesla would probably open that, huh?
I would think so,
Who cares?
What are you talking about?
Let's get back
about?
To this century, boys.
Brandon, open your heart. Love will find a way. Let's talk about this NHL rule. What would you change?
I'm going to go to something that's not a rule. In fact, my changing of a rule would actually be the enforcement of stick infractions, similar to how the IOC, when the boys travel, you got double-A games in the international games, to the degree of how sticky the refs are with stick infractions. That's what I'd like to see called at that level.
I would love to, you know, Jack Eichel, I think, said it in jest.
You are such a forward.
But I would love to see them get rid of the offside. I would love to see what it looked like.
It'd be a gong show. Why? It's like road hockey.
Now, let me add. Now, the NBA doesn't have offsides, and in the NBA, you can sit at the other end of the court if you want to all game long. Who does it? No one. No one does it. It's not like you would have you know, 4-on-5 inside your own zone for the hole. I would like to see it in practice. I think it could open things up just a little bit more. And then not only that, but then we don't have to sit through 35-minute offside reviews where a player's skate blade may have been a centimeter off the ice. We can just go ahead and get rid of half of the crap reviews we have to deal with every single game.
Do you break into hives when you're at your own blue line?
Dude, I have an EpiPen for back checking.
I think Yager brought that rule in from back in the day when Lemieux would just sit down there and yell at him to get back and not himself. I would obviously like just more consistency in the officiating overall, and like some of the players are saying, you know, call them the same in the playoffs.
Seems like such an easy thing.
Huh? It does, but that's what I would like to see. We'll ask you on the Boss Pizza Fan Line at 9 a.m. Brian Munns tees up Jets training camp, which starts tomorrow with us next on the Royal Sports Power Hour on The Big Show, TSN 1290.
This is The Big Show Podcast on TSN1290.ca. Catch The Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruwicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.
The Way It is another great Tesla song. What You Give.
What You Give, and
really good acoustic guitars.
Yes, absolutely.
And Tesla's music.
You pull the emergency fairly quickly on great Tesla songs, though.
I mean, we're not going to get a handful here. Counting a few fingers on our hand. The iHeartRadio app. Stream us on the iHeartRadio app and all your favorite devices, or get a customized playlist to suit your mood or activity. Your music, your station's always free. Download the iHeartRadio app and stream on. Little known fact, they're a Sacramento, California band. Helped save the Sacramento Kings. And the Kings were threatening to leave. They gave a couple benefit concerts. And
really?
Played a couple rallies to save the Kings.
Look at you.
Bobby Hurley, Chris Webber, save the Kings. So you think that it's over? Save the Kings! They saved the Sacramento Kings, Tesla nice. Did. They're good people, I guess. This is the Royal Sports Power Hour on TSN 1290. Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruwicki with you on The Big Show, TSN 1290. Winnipeg Jets training camp officially kicks off tomorrow at Bell MTS Iceplex. On-ice session at 9 a.m. 54 players invited to camp. Brian Munns, Winnipeg Jets analyst and a big part of our coverage here on TSN 1290, joins us now. Excited, Brian, to finally get it going? Has it been a long offseason?
Merry Christmas, guys.
Yeah.
My wife's happy. I'm out of the house again, finally. Yeah, you know what? It's good to be back around the rink. In Penticton, you kind of get the feel when you go down there for those 3-4 days to get a look at a lot of the young guys there that it's time to get back at it. You know, it was beautiful weather here, and you're kind of not in the mindset yet for hockey, but you get out there, you spend a lot of time indoors, you see what the excitement is for these young players to try and make their mark. So it's really a good kickoff for Paul Edmonds and I and Dennis Bayak. And then now when we're back here, the club's got medicals. There's a brief media availability here today that we'll be down there for, and then we really get rolling tomorrow. So it's good, and I think it adds to the excitement. And you look at it for the last couple of years, this is probably the most exciting team that we're going to see the possibility of now with the experience of Steve Mason in goal, the addition of a few other players that have come in, and then, you know, the odd free agent player that Kevin Cheveldayoff and Craig Heisinger brought in to try and figure out exactly where they could possibly fit into the lineup here. So the next 10 days or so leading through all these on-ice sessions out at Bell MTS Iceplex and the 7 preseason games are going to have a lot of curiosity around them.
Munzee, a couple of weeks ago, we got a call from a fan of the Jets and our station out in Finland telling us that Patrick Laine was bigger, stronger, and getting us that much more excited. Have you seen Laine yet? And how about you give us a number for how many you think he nets this year?
Oh, boy. Let's start with the number. I'll say he scores 40.
Okay.
He's got the experience. Will he score 40? Well, we don't know. Will he stay healthy? We don't know. Does he look bigger? I don't know, because when I visited with him for a while on Tuesday, he was in his full gear. It was during the Jets production day out at the Iceplex, and I was down there, and we recorded a whole bunch of neat little things that fans are going to have an opportunity to hear that's brand new to our broadcast and our game days on TSN 1290 this year. So I don't know if he's bigger. He's big. You forget how big some of these guys are when they're in their gear. Even Steve Mason, the goaltender, when you see these guys all filled out, and when they were going through their promo shoot, and then they came in the studio and recorded some stuff with me, these are some large pieces of people that compete for this city and for this organization. And Patrick's excited. He just got back into town about 3 a.m. on Tuesday morning, did kind of leave it to the end, but at the end of the day, he was back and had a big smile on his face and was really looking forward to his second NHL season now that he knows exactly what the daily rigors are and the expectation. And the fun thing, I think, still for him is, in all honesty, how big of a rock star he is in this city. You know, he was only in town a couple of hours at that point, but he said he was signing a whole bunch of autographs outside the arena and all that kind of stuff already when I talked to him. So there's a lot of fun with this now young 19-year-old player here. And, hey, he's our superstar along with Mark Scheifele. So let's enjoy having Patrick Laine and Mark Scheifele and see what these guys can do for this team this year.
So many storylines around this year's training camp, Brian, as there are most every year. But one of the ones that I'm sort of wondering about is the development of Connor Hellebuck as well. Steve Mason's here, and everybody's going to focus on the power play, the penalty kill, and being better defensively as a team overall. But in this sort of new excitement around the team and the free agents I've brought in, is the continuing development of a guy like Connor Hellebuck.
I agree, and I think development's the key word for you there, JT. When the pressure for me this year is off for Connor. You know, both he and Michael Hutchinson were put in a bit of a tough spot last year, and that's just the way the organization decided to go when they went young at forward and defense and said, hey, let's do it with goaltenders too, because Andre Pavlik wouldn't be back this year and they wanted to see what they had. And let's not forget, Connor had some really good games last year for this team. He was able to get them some wins, and then there was some nights where he was a first-year goalie in the NHL playing against the best players in the world. So he looked confident coming back. He was another guy that I sat down with on Tuesday and had a really good visit with. And he's in the right mindset here and looking forward to this year. And having an older player like Steve Mason, who knows exactly what the rigors are of an NHL regular season schedule, how to deal with the media on game day and all the off-ice stuff that these professional players have to get used to on a daily basis, I think is going to be really good for Connor. I think the off-ice portion is going to be just as big as the on-ice portion in this relationship between Mason and Hellebuck, and I think it's a really good fit for this team moving forward starting this year.
Munzee, when we heard Paul Maurice talk last week, came to the understanding that there's really probably like five spots that there's going to be some wiggle room for personnel and depth chart and that sort of thing. Your thoughts on those five openings people are talking about and possibly some of the individuals that might squeak in?
Well, when I look at the depth chart the way I've got it written down here, Troy, today, going into day one of training camp, I look at the fact that there might be maybe two spots at forward max, and I don't know if there's room anywhere else. The way I've got it drawn up right now, you look at Lowry as your third line setter, and then you look at Matt Hendricks as your number four, kind of sharing that role with Andrew Kopp as the year goes on. And then on the wings, you know, you've got Joel Armia, you've got Sean Mathias that are going to be here. And then really up for grabs for me are which of the two players are going to stay between Kyle Connor, Andrew Kopp, Mark O'Donnell, Nick Patan, and Jack Roslovic. And I know Brandon Tanev wants to push for a spot this year. I know Brendan Lemieux wants to be a Winnipeg Jet. So there's, to me, where the real battle is for this hockey club. On the blue line, I think we all know who the top six will probably be as long as everybody stays healthy during the next couple of weeks of training camp, with maybe Ben Sherrod as your number seven. I think Tucker Poolman will start the year in the American Hockey League with the Manitoba Moose. And then I think we know who the two goalies will be, obviously, with Mason and Hellebuck. So the real battle for me up front is who's going to round out the top six. And I also didn't mention Michael Scarboza, who got some time last year in the NHL and the American Hockey League that the Jets have brought in on a smaller contract, but a player that they feel can help at the NHL level. So the bottom six forward, and more specifically the fourth line right now, there's a real competition for jobs beginning tomorrow when the players hit the ice.
Winnipeg Jets analyst here on TSN 1290. Brian Munns joining us on the Big Show this morning, 41 minutes past the hour on the Royal Sports Power Hour on TSN 1290. With 54 players in camp, and with that being said about the lineup, Brian, how competitive of a camp is this going to be in your mind?
Well, I think it's going to be real competitive because, A, you've got those players that we kind of just ran through battling for a spot to be in the NHL, to play in their dream spot. And for the upper echelon players, they want to set the tone as to what they want to have. And Blake Wheeler's focused on this club getting into the playoffs this year. Mark Scheifele's focused right now on being one of the best players in the entire National Hockey League. Tyler Myers is healthy. Toby Enstrom is healthy. So you've got the leadership group for this club that wants to get into the postseason. And I expect this club to be really focused this year because all the hype, not only around the city but inside the room and across the league, expects this team to be a playoff team this year. So I think, you know, right when we step onto the ice for day one here tomorrow, that, you know, guys are going to have fun. There's going to be some smiles. But I think when it's work time this year, this group is going to be one that's pointed in one direction, and they're going to make sure that when it's work time, it's work time, and they'll enjoy their play time as a team together, and I think they'll be a really good group. But there's no question for me that this hockey club has a focus right now, and they feel they have enough personnel. Kevin Cheveldayoff has done his job. He's got the players that he believes can get this club into the top eight in the Western Conference. Now it's for the players, guided by Blake Wheeler and the leadership group here, to get that job done in a tough West, because there's a lot of other cities that feel their hockey clubs improved over the off season as well, and I think that's what makes it all curious for us going into training camp here as to how good this Winnipeg Jets group could be.
Munsey, outside of the Jets, and specifically in the Central, which team are you most interested in what happens this year?
Dallas. The Dallas Stars for me, and how they continue to build their club. Ben Bishop in goal, you talk to some people around the league, just the addition of he alone feels that that club is 5, 6, maybe 7 wins better than what they were a year ago. That's just how good Ben Bishop's reputation is around the National Hockey League. That, to me, right now is the wild card team. I don't know, in all honesty, if I'm sold, and it's hard to say this, but will the Chicago Blackhawks be a playoff team? Will the St. Louis Blues be a playoff team? I don't think anybody believes that Colorado's going to get in there yet. So for the Central Division itself, you've got Winnipeg battling with Dallas. There's a curiosity with Nashville and the Ryan Ellis injury right now and Mike Fisher's retirement, how that club, is there any hangover coming out of the Stanley Cup playoff push from last year? Will they be able to get back to where they need to be? And Minnesota's always good, right? Like, the Wild just play that hard game that seems to grind a lot of people down, and you look at the calendar and it's always Winnipeg and Minnesota for teams that come up to this region that end up playing back-to-back games that make it real tough on the opposition. So I think that's kind of the way I look at the Central Division shaking down, but again, we're going into training camp and we don't know what the injuries are for teams that go through this calendar, and if there's any catastrophic injury to somebody that really derails their season, kind of like what the Jets went through last year, losing Myers and Enstrom for the majority of the year, really put a dent in their run last season. That's kind of the way, you know, going in early, that I kind of prognosticate as to how this thing may have an opportunity to shake down.
What can our listeners expect? You mentioned you were working on some stuff already for the broadcast with Paul Edmonds. I know you guys work to get better and improve, and not only that, but make our broadcast more exciting here on TSN 1290. What can listeners expect this season?
Oh, it's top secret, JT. I can't tell you yet. I will tell you, though, that your name is involved.
Oh.
And there was a little bit of curiosity from some of the players exactly. You know what? That's as far as I'm going to go. So we're gonna have some fun with it. You know, the players were great. This is really the first year Chris Brooke and Rack Kearney kind of had this brainwave during the offseason about can we do something? And we went to the Jets, and they said, yeah, we'll get on board with this. So it'll be fun. You know what? The players had a little bit of fun with it. There was some giggles, and yeah. Let's leave it with that, and we'll say in radio world, stay tuned.
I better go get some sleep. It's going to be a long season, it sounds like, for me. Munsey, we appreciate it. Yeah, we appreciate it as always. I know we'll see you out there when the big show goes out to training camp tomorrow morning at Bell MTS Iceplex, and look forward to the coverage throughout the season.
Bring breakfast, boys. We'll look forward to seeing you.
Thanks, Brian.
All right. We'll take a break. Brian Munns once again on The Big Show. NHL news and notes are next on the Royal Sports Power Hour, TSN 1290.
This is The Big Show podcast on TSN1290.ca. Catch The Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruwicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.
Back on The Big Show, TSN 1290 and TSN1290.ca, and 1290, along with Clay Oven East Indian Restaurants, present Caring for Kids, Support the Staff and Services of the Children's Hospital Foundation of Manitoba today. Text KIDS to 129090, where standard message rates may apply. Every time you do, Clay Oven East Indian Restaurants will donate $1 to the Children's Hospital, up to $1,000. Your actions can help the Children's Hospital help keep caring for kids across Manitoba. Kids like Michaelia, who is currently battling cancer. For more on caring for kids, visit TSN1290.ca. Jim, Troy, and Brandon, and NHL news and notes time. Gentlemen, Milan Hayduk gets his jersey retired in Colorado. Is he a Hall of Famer?
I'll just say no. I'll speed this up and say no.
I'll agree. I say no.
Yeah. Hall of good. Avs Hall of Fame, not the NHL Hall of Fame.
Interesting, yes. Sorry, just looking here. 1,000 games, 1,020, 375 goals, 805 points. Yeah. About 200 off the pace of a point per game. So, yeah, I don't have him in as a Hall of Fame as well.
No.
Played his entire career with Colorado, though. Matt Duchene. Is he traded before the season starts?
You know what, man? This has been so long and strung out. I'm going to say no simply. I was going to rely on track record, but I hope for everyone involved that he is. But because of what's transpired up to this point in time, I'm going to say no.
It's crazy this is even a discussion right now. I mean, that's my initial reaction to this. If you're Joe Sakic, you've just completely overplayed your hand here. And I don't know if he gets the deal he wants now. I find it hard to believe that Colorado would go into the season with him still on the roster. Like, it's unfair to Duchene at this point.
And the team.
To have him just twisting in the wind like this. It's bizarre, and unfortunately for Sakic, he looks overmatched as a GM in the NHL. He looks like he doesn't totally know what he's doing. And I think he's going to get moved, and I think it's going to be for an underwhelming return. And I got a bad feeling that Nashville might get a little bit stronger before the season starts.
Shut up.
Bad feeling.
You think that's where he's going? They've had discussions about
him. I think Nashville, if I'm Nashville, that's the final piece of the puzzle. So I would say Nashville and even Columbus, a team like Columbus, they've got a lot that they can potentially give in a deal. I would say those are the two teams I'd peg him going to.
Why has he been so, and that organization been so dead set on trying to, like, in bringing this up and trying to trade him for the last number of years? Why is it such a, why weren't they willing to let him settle in to the Avs after the early starts that this failed and, like, put that to bed and bring him in and move forward with him?
I would guess it's a combination of maybe they feel like because Duchene's been kind of a 60-point guy, maybe they feel like he's a 70, 80-point guy and he hasn't reached it. And then you combine that with the fact that this team has no defensemen, really. Like, you have Barry and Eric Johnson, and then after that you got absolutely nothing in your farm system in terms of guys who can make an impact in the NHL. I think it's almost more so the fact that they don't have defensemen, so they need to trade one of their top forwards, and Nathan MacKinnon's off the table, and now Mikko Rantanen is off the table for them.
He had 70 points in 2013-14. It was around there the trade talk has happened, and ever since then, and he's 55, 59, and then last year 41. And they're coming out talking. He was talking about how difficult it was just to play and be in that environment last year. Just unbelievable, the erosion of what looked to be a very promising young team not very long ago.
Yeah, and Patrick Waugh, like I said, I'm not a fan. He bails on the team, literally.
And everyone thought he looked like the...
And everybody thought like he was the quitter. Yeah. He was this. And really, realistically, it looks like he was getting out of an awful situation. Matt, and the reason we bring this up is Matt Duchene is in Denver. He has arrived for the start of training camp. There was some rumors that are not rumors, but some speculation of if you're him, like, why would you go to camp? Like, this is dragged on so long. You know, they're still trying to deal you. Just maybe wait until the deal is done. But he has arrived in Denver and will take part in training camp. NHL news and notes on the Big Show, TSN 1290.
You do have to wonder what a guy like Nathan MacKinnon feels like, right? At 22 years old, and you're still tied up in this, what looks to be this absolute gong show of an organization for the next 6 years. Like, what a, you just hope, just for the sake of that team and the market down there, you hope they just start to reflect something decent as an organization.
I know it's different sports, but this is what my concern was, and that's why I'm glad he wasn't named the head coach of the Montreal Alouettes and Anthony Calvillo, because Joe Sakic to me is a prime example of how, and I'll refer back to Steve Yzerman. He gets involved, Chris Draper gets involved with the Red Wings, does some jobs, slowly learns the ropes, gets mentored under Ken Holland. Draper's still there. Yzerman goes on, has become one of the most brilliant dynamic general managers in the National Hockey League. You bestow this on Joe Sakic, and he's now become the root of all evil to an organization that he literally was the lifeblood for years and years and years. Yeah. And I was wondering about this, like, if Calvillo was given the head coach job and it doesn't go well, what do you do with him? Because you want him in the organization, you want him involved, you want this. Like, what has happened with Joe Sakic and his reputation, not only with the Colorado Avalanche, but with the National Hockey League, is, you know, it's Gretzky-like when you refer to him in the Phoenix Coyotes.
But I don't know that some, you know, if the process was slower, if you'd necessarily get a different result. Right? There's a long list of guys that were involved in the league that are now GMs, and some fast track, some longer routes and all the rest of it. Some guys make it, some guys don't. Everyone can't be successful in that transition.
But what credentials did he have? And when you look at the fact that they made the playoffs and then what's happened since then, it's alarming. Your head coach walked on you.
He had the credentials of living, eating, and breathing hockey pretty much his entire life.
That
like
doesn't
most
make you
the guys
good
there.
That doesn't make you a good management.
Well, I understand that, man. But how people could use the point that you use for a lot of the individuals there, though, right? Like that are in hockey spots and all the rest of it. Like people when Brendan Shanahan went into the role with the Leafs. Did everyone understand where they'd be at right now? Was everyone thinking this is a fantastic move? And yada,
my point
yada?
To that is another prime example of a guy who wasn't given ultimate duties of or overseeing the organization right away.
He wasn't?
No, he was brought in as an assistant and a consultant, and then he was.
No way, man! Like, dude, well, how
and
long?
He had worked with other teams. And he worked with the national. League. He worked with the National Hockey League.
Sure, but what the hell did that have to do with him being whatever his title is? He's the top dog there.
It's the intricacies of how an organization runs.
He doesn't learn that when he's working with the NHL.
Sure, he does, Troy. You're dealing with every organization on a daily basis, disciplinary, and you don't think you learn facets of how organizations run?
I just think you're picking a fruit off the tree here that for one specific guy that struggled, where there's a long list of that guys that didn't struggle, that had to have different timelines going into that same position. And you could look at any league, any sport, such as the case. Not everybody's going to be successful. Right? Joe Sakic, he could have taken 10 years to have this opportunity and still fail because he has maybe specific shortcomings or understandings that just aren't going to be positive attributes in that position.
I don't agree with that. I think he needed more seasoning around how an organization actually works and functions. And maybe his head coach wouldn't have walked on him. Maybe his team wouldn't be in disarray right now. And maybe he could pull off a trade for a star player that's actually wanted by other teams. I think he's highly inexperienced in this position, and it's showing throughout the course of the past 2 to 3 seasons. Anyway, those are my opinions. Pastrnak, does he get a deal done? We're out of time, but
everyone's saying so.
We'll touch on that maybe a little bit more in our next qualifier segment. Jeff Reinbold talks NFL Week 2 with us next on The Big Show, TSN 1290.
This is The Big Show Podcast on TSN1290.ca. Catch The Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruwicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290. We'll be right back.
Our province is packed with shining stars in the world of sports. Every week, TSN 1290 would like to showcase and reward these individuals who are making a big impact and difference in what they do. Nominate a Manitoban athlete, coach, or volunteer who is dedicated to making their sport matter. Every Friday on The Big Show, we'll showcase a Subway Sports Star of the Week and reward him or her with a $50 Subway gift card. Visit TSN1290.ca to nominate your sports star, and we could be featuring them very soon, including on tomorrow's Big Show, which once again will be live at Bell MTS Iceplex as the Winnipeg Jets officially kick off training camp. Medicals are today, and they'll hit the ice at 9 a.m. at Bell MTS Iceplex. The Big Show will be live there to kick off Winnipeg Jets training camp. Extensive coverage, including Mr. Paul Maurice joining us on the broadcast live between 6 a.m. and 11 a.m. tomorrow morning right here on TSN 1290. Week 2 in the National Football League gets underway this evening, as the Cincinnati Bengals at 0-1 host the Houston Texans at 0-1 as well. Troy's really pumped to see this game, and you can hear it right here on TSN 1290 as well.
I am, because I love defense, but it's such a monumental game for both these teams.
You make a good point about the traveling and the short and the turnaround and everything.
Dude,
because they would have had to leave
Sunday,
when? Tuesday night?
If you play Sunday, Monday is for sure a day off, and maybe you're watching film. And then Tuesday you practice, Wednesday you travel, Thursday you play. These games are crazy. This league will be better off if they get rid of Thursday night games.
We welcome in to the program former CFL coach and, of course, NFL analyst for Sky Sports, Mr. Jeff Reinbold. Coach, how are you today?
I'm great, guys. How you doing?
Very well. Before we get into the NFL, I'd just like to get your thoughts on the CFL and the CFLPA announcing they'll have no more contact practices and are adding another bye week to the season.
Well, I think the first thing that, when I talk about what they did well, obviously, Randy and the Players Association getting together and working through a challenge is a positive step for me. That shows me that we've got good leadership at the top of the league. I think what Troy said about these short turnaround games, and you guys were talking about Houston going up to Cincinnati this week. It was also good to see them address that issue. Because one of the challenges that's been, in our league for a long, long, long time, you talk to the old-timers and they talk about going on the Eastern Swing or the Western Swing where you take the train and you play, three games in 11 days. I mean, this is a different game. This isn't tennis. This isn't badminton. This isn't croquet or, this is a contact sport. And your body can only take so much. And as the athletes have gotten bigger and faster and the collisions are more intense, you have to adjust to that. And so I think Randy and Jeff and everybody that was involved in getting that done and, going to a 21-week season next year is going to help the players. And then, again, the contact issue, I'm not really sure because they talk about – in the press release, they talk about full contact. Well, shoot, Troy will tell you, there's never been full contact outside of training camp that I've ever seen in a CFL camp. Now, if they're talking about – contact at all, that's a different deal. How you're going to monitor it is going to be one thing. I know guys in the National Football League, you have to put a camera on your practice field so that in New York, they monitor everybody's practice, when they're on, when they're off, what drills they're doing, all of those things. That's why Seattle got in trouble a couple times for having too aggressive OTAs, too aggressive off-season team activities. It'll be interesting to see how they're going to monitor it, but I think it's a step in the right direction. We've got to make the game safer for the players. Where will it be a challenge? Tackling will be an issue. And I think for the big guys, it's really tough for the big guys. What they do is so unique, but I think in the overall picture, it's a positive step.
We just have to interrupt this conversation with Jeff Reinbold. There's some breaking news coming out of the Winnipeg Jets camp. Jamie Thomas, who of course is the new host and insider for Jets TV, just tweeted out moments ago. First day of camp for the Winnipeg Jets, hearing the team has signed center Brian Little to a multi-year extension.
More to come. That's from Jamie Thomas, Jets insider. Looks like Brian Little is getting a multi-year extension. He was due to become an unrestricted free agent after this season. Back to our conversation with Coach Reinbold.
That's good news. I'm fascinated by the matchup tonight, Coach. You got Houston, who lost at home and embarrassed 29-7, and Cincinnati, that was humiliated by Baltimore at home 20-0. And like we were talking about, this super short week with Houston where they lose Brian Cushing because of a PED suspension for 10 games. And also Tom Savage, after about 30 plays, is told, that's enough from you, young fella. Stay on the sideline. We're going with Deshaun Watson. Unless Houston scores 14 points on defense, how can they win this game tonight?
Well, I'm going to tell you something, Troy. I think maybe Tom Savage went over to Bill O'Brien and said, that's enough for me. the way he was getting hit, he was like a pinata back there. I mean, they were taking whacks at him left and right. 10 sacks in one game. I mean, that's unbelievable. I don't care if you got a guy who's tethered to a post. You shouldn't hit the quarterback. I mean, get the quarterback down 10 times. You know, when you're talking about pro football, you can guarantee that you're going to get at least 3 what we call lightning bolts a year, issues that come up, you know, player suspended, you know, a guy gets a DUI, a fight on, you know, there's always going to be turmoil and there's always going to be distractions and adversity. But golly, Houston has gotten more than their share in the first, you know, week of the season. They have the hurricane, they get displaced, they lose a preseason game. You know, they can't practice on their own facility. They come in open this season and get pounded at home. Then their star linebacker gets a second PED suspension. Bill O'Brien's got to be shaking his head because this is not at all the way everybody thought the Texans were going to start the season. Everybody's talking about how they had a Super Bowl caliber defense, and I was one of the ones talking about it. But, boy, they struggled mightily in that first game. And you know, Cincinnati, the same thing, Troy. I mean, 3 years ago we were talking about the Bengals having one of the best rosters top to bottom in the National Football League. Then they lose Patrick Newman. Then they lose Nelson. Then they lose Maunga. Then they lose Pecco. And, you know, and then they lose Whitworth. And they start losing key players and haven't been able to replace them with, you know, with guys. And, you know, Andy Dalton was – he's just not built to be a guy to, you know, move around in the pocket and stay away from the rush and win games. He's a, you know, he's a true pocket guy. And I tell you what, he was running for his life too, you know, in this thing. I think the state of Ohio should add 2 species to the endangered species list for this week, and it'd be the quarterbacks in this football game.
Coach Jeff Reinbold joining us, talking NFL from Sky Sports, NFL analyst, and of course former CFL coach as well on the Big Show this morning, TSN 1290. Very interested to see this New Orleans New England game this weekend, Coach. A lot of questions around the Patriots defense, and of course a lot of questions about how the Pats respond to that loss to Kansas City, and same for New Orleans and Drew Brees and what happened Monday night in Minnesota. What do you think of this matchup between the Pats and the Saints?
Well, you know, again, you just look at it historically, the Patriots have very rarely played as poorly as they played the other night. And if you look at their history has always been that they bounce back. I'm sure those were not a very pleasant 2 or 3 days of practice this week in New England for the players, for the coaches, for everybody, because, you know, Bill's just not going to put up with that. And they've got a lot of pride in that organization. I think, you know, losing Hightower, I thought, really hurt them. But I think they'll bounce back in this game. I'm not, again, guys, you know, this is why preseason is kind of a mirage, because you looked at the Saints' defense in preseason and you thought, okay, Dennis Allen's done a great job. They played really good defense in preseason. And then they go out and go to Minnesota and can't pressure the quarterback, can't cover, can't tackle, can't stop the run. And it looked like, you know, the Saints' defense that we've seen for the last couple of years. So I think this is a big one for the Saints, too. I think the Saints, if they've got any chance to get to the playoffs, have got to show that they can play some defense.
Coach, am I crazy to be excited about what Jacksonville might have defensively? I know we were just talking Houston and the 10 sacks and the 5 turnovers, but holy smackers, did they come out of the gate? Have they finally realized some of that potential that people have been talking about for a couple years in Jacksonville?
Well, first of all, Troy, is that a rhetorical question? Because are you crazy? Absolutely, you're crazy. I mean, when I saw you kick off and run down and try and break the wedge, I said, that guy, with a single bar face mask, I said, that guy's out of his mind.
The single bar face mask alone is a bold move.
I know, but let's get to the real question. Everybody knows you're crazy. Now, is it crazy to think that Jacksonville's defense is as good as it is? No, because they drafted extremely well, Troy. They, you know, you look at Fowler and you look at that secondary, they got guys at every level. And the key piece to me was when they went out last year and they got Calais Campbell from Arizona. And, you know, not to be a master of the obvious because the guy had four sacks the first week, but not just his production, but the kind of veteran leadership that he brings. You know, he's one of those guys that has that motor, and he's not going to put up with guys around him not playing as hard as he plays. And I think that is really critical because it's a nice mix now of with Pulisic. I can't even pronounce the kid's name. Paul Posluszny and Calais Campbell. They got veterans who, you know, they can lean on, and then they got all those young, talented guys behind them. So I think it's a nice mix in Jacksonville.
Yeah, I really like their defense and what they're doing there. Atlanta and Green Bay rematch Sunday night from their playoff game. What do you expect in that one, Coach?
All I'm going to say is Green Bay ain't no Chicago Bears. And, you know, the Bears were throwing – Mike Glennon was throwing it from the doorstep of the end zone to win that game last week. There's still so many things about Atlanta that you like, but there are an awful lot of things about Atlanta that you don't like. I thought the Packers really showed in their game against Seattle because, you know, Seattle came in there and thought they're going to run the ball on them and pound them and be physical with them. And the Packers stood toe-to-toe with them and actually played really, really good defense. And to me, as long as you got number 12 on his feet, you got a chance.
Coach, great insight as always. We appreciate your time. It should be a great week, too. We look forward to it. Thanks for doing this.
Hey, now, you got to do me a favor. When you see Jamie, right, tell him that I will send him a 7-3-8 San Francisco Giants hat if he will lose that Dodgers hat.
Giants over Dodgers. I'm writing this down because Jamie's going to join us live on the show tomorrow when we go out to Winnipeg Jets camp. So we'll talk to him then. Giants hat for Dodgers hat. Free. From Coach Reinbold. Got it.
Thanks, Coach. Brother. Take care, man. Mahalo.
All right, see you.
And just for those who are maybe just tuning in earlier in this segment, we let you know that Jamie Thomas, the new Jets TV host and insider, tweeting out momentarily ago, just at the top of this hour. Jets training camp just getting underway. Physicals today, of course. First day of camp, Jets hearing that the team has signed center Brian Little to a multi-year extension. More to come on this, so we'll continue to follow that. And, of course, get your thoughts on that in the Boss Pizza fan line at 9. Your next chance to qualify for Hockey Nights in Vegas is next on The Big Show, TSN 1290.
This is The Big Show podcast on TSN 1290.ca. Catch The Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruwicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.
TSN 1290 presents Hockey Nights in Vegas, and if you're the 12th caller through right now at 780-1290, you'll be our latest qualifier as we are sending 5 lucky listeners and their guests to Las Vegas this November, where they'll see the Winnipeg Jets take on the Las Vegas Golden Knights on November the 10th. It's a Friday at T-Mobile Arena. We'll get you there and back with return airfare to and from Sin City, 4 nights accommodations right on the Strip. And put $1,290 cash in your pocket to help cover a few extras during your stay, along with 2 hockey tickets to the Knights and Jets game. Listen for your chance to qualify and win weekdays on The Big Show, 7:15 a.m. And right now at 8:15 a.m., 12:15 p.m. with Kevin Hrushevsky on the Don Vito Roundtable, and 5:15 p.m. on the afternoon ride with Hustler and Rick Ralph. And continue to watch for bonus chances to qualify online. Winners will be announced Monday mornings right here on The Big Show. Our next grand prize draw is September 25th. Then again on October the 9th and 23rd, and our final grand prize draw will be made on Monday, November the 6th. For more information, check out tsn1290.ca. Hockey Nights in Vegas. Go all in with us here at TSN 1290.
Mr. Brandon Rewicki, who is our next qualifier and 12th caller through?
Lenny Blackburn.
Congratulations, sir. You are our latest qualifier for Hockey Nights in Vegas. And just for doing so, we'll give you a Jets Gear gift card. Perhaps you spend that gift card on something with a Brian Little number 18 on it. Jamie Thomas, Jets Insider, now tweeting out or moments ago that he's hearing the Winnipeg Jets have signed Brian Little to an extension. Ooh. Due to become an unrestricted free agent.
Just came out the terms.
At the end of this season. What are they?
Do you want to make guesses here, or should we just get to it?
You know what? Let's go.
Just get to it. We can guess all day long.
6 years.
Shut up.
5.29.
Six years. Darren Dreger putting this out as well.
Wow.
Good work from Jamie Thomas. 6 year extension for Little, 5.291 average.
The money ain't no thing, but he turns 30 in November. Wow.
I don't have a problem with that. That's my initial reaction.
I don't like it.
That's long. Things get a little bit scary. 33, 34, 35.
Why?
Are you crazy?
Just because of age?
Are you being serious?
Yeah, I'm being dead serious. Like, the idea of talking about a 36-year-old not being able to play anymore with Brian Little's skill?
It's not a matter of not being able to play anymore, but it's what level, and then you got that much money wrapped up in a third, or, you know, how you never know how sharp the fall-off's going to be. Just that's something that's never known.
Well, and because of that, isn't it good that you locked it in? Because if you don't know and it doesn't fall off...
Dude, that is the backward way to look at it. I can't believe.
I don't understand the fever around. Like, look at Andrew Ladd. And I understand that was a little bit high, but you think Andrew Ladd's not going to be physically fit and able to perform at 35 years old?
I don't think he will be.
Nobody looks at that contract and think that's a good situation with him.
I'm not talking the money's a good situation. I just don't think that you're done at 35.
Mm. Lots of guys are pretty much done at 35, man. Lots of guys.
It's the new trend in the NHL. Not that you're completely washed up and, you know, an AHL player at 35, but just the track record has shown that going into your 30s, point production drops off dramatically.
So at 35 years old, at 5.29, and if you have Scheifele and Roslovic ahead of you and you're now the third line center, you don't think that's worth it?
No.
Because Roslovic will probably be on his second contract. Scheifele is still in, probably looking at a new contract coming up that year when he's 35. What's wrong with that down the middle?
I don't think paying your third line center over $5 million is good business.
What if it's paying him over the first 33, 34, 3 to 4 years of that? When your potential second line center is still making league minimum.
Well, but you're talking complimentary parts as well, right? That's a long contract. That's going to surprise everyone's going to talk about the length of that contract.
So it goes up from 4.7 per to 5.2 for Brian Little.
Yeah, I don't think the money's that. It's just the
it's
like
the
it's
term.
It's
the term.
It's the like even 4 years at that I think wouldn't have been like you can live with that. You can probably manage and massage your way through that. But the 6 years, 30, just look at the 35, 36-year-olds in the NHL that play forward right now and tell me how successful they are. And there's very, very few of them.
Very few.
Okay, let me put it to you this way then. If that's the cost of it, like at 35, 36, to get them for the next four at that price, is that not the price you pay? As opposed to paying six or seven, like what would he get on the free agent market is what I'm saying? And then you turn that around and add the 2 years at the end. Is that not a fair market value for the next 4 years, even though it's a six-year contract?
I have no doubt. Like for the next three years for sure. That like and maybe specifically this window that exists in front of the Winnipeg Jets over the next whatever it is right now to 3 years from now. There's going to be an intense opportunity here for the Winnipeg Jets. And having Brian Little under contract for that is a real positive thing. And we all know the importance of things down the middle. The last 3 years, and for sure the last 2 years of that, is probably going to pose some trouble or be viewed as a negative. But I understand, like, what you, I think what you're saying is the final 2 years of that contract worth what you get in the first four? And in today's NHL, you see a lot of contracts like that, right? You have to look in like a place like Chicago, or pick your contracts like that, where you're getting a certain amount of star power or real solid play early on, and you need it critical for the window that you've got. Are you willing to eat it a little bit in the back end of that?
Like, that's what I'm basically saying, is that's how Chicago's done business, and that's how they've won championships, is you do it this way and you figure it out 4 years from now, 5, 6 years from now, 8 years from
it's
now.
It's a fair point to make, and you see a lot of teams do it.
And if that's the way to do it, I have no problem with that. We'll get your thoughts on the Boss Pizza or problem with the extension for Little. We'll get your thoughts on that and much more. And David Pagnotta talks more with us next on The Big Show, TSN 1290.
This is The Big Show Podcast on TSN1290.ca. Catch The Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruwicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.
Back on The Big Show, TSN 1290, TSN 1290.ca. It is official, as Winnipeg Jets announced with a press release, they have extended the contract of center Brian Little to a 6-year deal at $5.291 million. He was making $4.7 million. So 6 years and an increase of just over $500,000 a year for Brian Little, the 12th overall pick back in the 2006 draft. We'll open the Boss Pizza fan line at 9 o'clock. We'll get your thoughts on that. Chris Walby is also going to join us right before the top of the hour to give us his thoughts on the CFL and CFLPA coming to the agreement that there'll be no contact practices anymore and another bye week in the season.
Buckle up, because he's going to have a hot take on it.
David Pagnotta joins us now from the fourthperiod.com, but of course you will open the Boss Pizza fan line at 9 o'clock. 6 years, $5.291 million extension per for Brian Little, an increase of just over $500,000 from the fourthperiod.com. As I said, David Pagnotta, good to hear from you again. How are you, sir?
Not as good as Brian Little right now, but I'm pretty good.
Well, we just started debating that, and I think I've been saying this for over a year. I think at the expense of maybe 2 years from now at Matthew Perreault or somebody like that, you have to re-sign Brian Little. He does get the deal. Your thoughts not only on the deal, the price, the years, but how it fits with the Jets over the next 6 years?
Well, they obviously want him to be, that piece up the middle that they get to utilize and spread around the lineup. For 6 more years. So, this is a move that they felt obviously comfortable with, that certainly Brian feels comfortable with. And, they like the fit. They like what he brings to the table and the chemistry that he's built with some of the other guys on the team. And it's a slight increase, like you mentioned. But this isn't something that's going to, go over and break the bank for the team. And you're going to look back in a couple of years, providing he's still, performing solidly, that you're going to look back and say, man, why did we give him, $5.291 million a season? This is a reliable, sturdy player, and a consistent, for the most part, a very consistent, sturdy player. So to have him locked up at that price, you probably add a couple more years onto a deal rather than a 4-year at a higher cap hit. You go into a 6 at a little bit of a lower cap hit from an overall perspective. But getting over $30 million on a 6-year, 31 just over on a 6-year deal for I think makes sense for both sides, and I think it's a solid contract.
David, I like asking people outside of this market, when they look at the Jets, what they think is going to happen for a team needing to improve goaltending, its team defensive play and special teams. What are your thoughts on what the Jets accomplished this year?
I think from an offensive perspective, they're going to be exciting to watch. They certainly should be. This is going to be a team that's going to rely heavily on its offense to take it over the hump and get into the postseason again and make a bit of noise from that regard. Obviously, it's going to come down to goaltending, but when you're putting up that extra marker every game or every second game or on a consistent basis, it eases the pain and a bit of the pressure off of the goaltender, and even from the defensive corps perspective, it looks like, you know, obviously the offense will, as I mentioned, carry the load. But from a defensive standpoint, it looks like there could be a pretty strong balance on the back end for them to help out, you know, the goaltender. And when you've got the new guy in place, he wants to be able to step up right away and leave his mark on the team pretty quickly when you start the season. Forget about training camp and preseason. That's just everybody getting out the kinks. Nobody really cares about that. It really comes down to what happens starting October 4th. And for the Jets, again, offense. But I believe they've got enough on the back part to kind of, you know, hold down the fort and allow the offensive guys, whether it's Scheifele or Little or Laine or Ehlers or whomever that's going to be taking the charge on any given night. They've got enough on the back end to combat the opposition. So really, for this team, depending how far they go this season, it's going to be all about how many goals they can put up on a consistent basis.
David, we've been debating all summer long here that, and I think we're in agreement on the big show between the three of us, that Dallas and, well, Troy doesn't have the Jets making the playoffs, but has them getting better. Brandon and I have them making the playoffs along with Dallas. So if that's the case, who in the Central or the West takes a step back in your mind, or do you think nobody does?
I think St. Louis is going to take a bit of a step back. Personally, they still have some pieces in place, but this is a team that doesn't have, still in my mind, the depth up the middle that some of the other teams have. And, you know, you can look at Tarasenko all you want, and you look at the offense all you want. And I know I talked about the offense being the key catalyst for the Jets this season, but they've got a balance in terms of the wings and up the middle. And I'm not confident in what St. Louis has up the middle that they can bring to the table on a regular basis. And this is going to be the first time in a while that they've got, you know, Jake Allen between the pipes that can run the show from day one. And this is, you know, for them, goaltending will be one thing. They seem confident in it enough and their defense is sound. And you've got Tarasenko to kind of lead the charge from an offensive perspective. But in terms of getting over the hump for the Blues, it comes down to how their middle game is going to be. And positionally, that for me is their weakness, is what they have up the middle. So for that reason, I'm expecting them to regress a little bit and be on the outside looking in for postseason play. I agree. I think Dallas will certainly improve. They should, you know, minus a few injuries from last season. They could have been back in that discussion. But this season, if they stay healthy, if Radulov comes in and provides the offensive flair that they're expecting of him, that he had in Montreal, and you know, he'll be playing with better players, with you know, whether it's you know, playing on a line with Seguin and Ben, or whether it's going to be utilizing those guys on a power play unit, it's going to be it adds to the potency that they've got up front. But they've got the guys up the middle, so I think for Dallas, as I mentioned, they'll improve. The Jets will improve. I think St. Louis will take a step back. And then it really comes down to, you know, which teams are going to get those extra points in regulation versus overtime. Who's going to close things out in 60 minutes versus, you know, the added time in overtime, where you're only generating 1 point advantage over the team versus two. There's a lot of balance in the league right now for the most part in terms of how many teams are going to compete for a playoff spot. As I mentioned, on the West, I think St. Louis regresses, and I think the rest of it comes down to the full 60 minutes.
Ryan Ellis out. That means the Preds will be relying a lot more on Alexei Emelin than they thought they'd have to. Are you expecting a Preds team, David, that resembles more so the playoff run or more so what they did accomplish during the regular season?
I think somewhere in the middle, because I expected them to have that the playoff performance I expected out of the gate last season. This is a team that a lot of people did. A lot of people thought that they were going to be a very well-balanced, strong, depth-driven team that can put the puck in the net. They've got the offensive capabilities. They've got a world-class goaltender. They've got a ridiculously strong defense. And even without Ellis, I mean, you know, certainly you're going to lose Ellis. It's going to be a hit. But this is a team that still has Roman Josi leading the charge and PK Subban in the back end as well. But it's Josi's blue line. And it might eventually be his team. I don't know if they've named him a captain officially yet, but it looks like it's going in that direction. This is a team that is they built this club based on their depth. And yeah, they've got Ryan Johansson as number one center and Philip Forsberg and a number of other weapons up front. And losing James Neal for them wasn't as big of a deal through the expansion draft as it would have been for a number of other teams because of the depth. I think they'll be somewhere in the middle. They're certainly going to be a competitive team. They're not going to be I would be surprised if they're the last playoff team in the Western Conference. They should take that step up based on the confidence of that run that they had and the experience there. I don't think the shortened offseason for them will play that much of a difference. I think they got a taste of it. And knowing some of the guys on that team, they're going to want to get back there and finish off, you know, what they felt they started last season. So I'm expecting a better start to the season than they had last year. I don't think they're going to be, you know, great as they were in the playoffs consistently through 82 games. But this should be an improved team, without a doubt, from a regular season standpoint.
David Pagnotta from thefourthperiod.com joining us today on The Big Show, 42 minutes past the hour on TSN 1290. Darren Dreger of TSN tweeting out a little bit ago that it sounds like some progress is being made between the Boston Bruins and David Pastrnak. So we'll move over to Colorado, David, as we've been doing, it seems like every time you join us. What's the latest you're hearing on Matt Duchene and if he is going to be an Avalanche this year or for how long?
He doesn't want to be. I think that's been pretty clear. And especially, you know, we got a number of comments that we've been hearing, not just from him, but from his agent as well, Pat Brisson. And we talked about this throughout the course of the offseason about how if they're going into the season with Matt Duchene, they need to have that sit down with everybody. You got to have the coaching staff, management, the agent, and the player. And they didn't do that. To me, it's a slap in the face. I do not see any issue outside of the contractual legalities associated with it, but sitting out of camp and not showing up, you have to take a stand every now and again. And, you know, he's been messed around with for, you know, over a full season in terms of where his future was going to be. And the mind games can play a toll on a player, on any athlete in any sport. I don't agree with the way that they've approached the situation. I don't agree with the way that they handled the entire situation. They could have easily come out and said, yeah, look, we're going to listen just like we listen to any player, but, you know, we want Matt Duchene a part of this team. They never said that. They said that, you know, if the right offer comes along, we're going to move him, and that was pretty much it. Well, okay, well, that's a great vote of confidence that you've got in your player. You could have handled this a lot differently, and they didn't do that for whatever the reason. They chose to go this route. I would be surprised still to see him start the regular season with the Avs. I would suspect he gets dealt, and trade talks have picked up over the last little bit. Nothing serious, but just a lot of, hey, all right, we're back to this situation. Camp starts in you know, a week. This was last week. Camp starts in a week. Let's start the conversations over again, and let's see if we can refresh and try to work out a deal. There are a number of teams that would love to have Matt Duchene on their team, and the offers will come. You know, they'll come piling in. It's really Joe Sakic and his staff determining what they feel is right. And, you know, a lot of teams are not willing to pay a premium for him. So you've got to decide. You've got to make that decision and bite the bullet if you feel you're not getting, you know, 100% of what you want. But if you're getting 85 or 90% of what you're looking for in a trade for Matt Duchene at this stage, you really don't have much of a choice. You're just leaving yourself in a bad situation that's going to leave a bad taste in a lot of people's mouths, especially come, you know, free agency and stuff like that when you want to have players join this team.
Great stuff. As always, David, we appreciate your time and enjoy the rest of your week.
All right. You too, guys. Thanks.
Thanks so much, David. Take care, man.
David Pagnotta, thefourthperiod.com. Chris Walby with his thoughts on no more contact practices in the CFL is next, and then the Boss Pizza Fan Line at 9 a.m. on the Brian Little Extension and much more. This is The Big Show on TSN 1290.
This is The Big Show podcast on TSN 1290.ca. Catch The Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruwicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.
Boston Pizza Fan Line is going to be open here on The Big Show at 9 o'clock for you to weigh in on several things, including the Winnipeg Jets extending Brian Little to a six-year deal worth $31.75 million. That is a average annual value of $5.291 million, just over a $500,000 raise from the $4.7 he was currently making. He'll be 30 in November. He'll be 36 when that deal runs out. We'll talk about that. The start of Jets training camp is tomorrow. The Big Show will be live at Bell MTS Iceplex from 6 all the way through till 11 o'clock with coverage from training camp. Jamie Thomas, who broke the news, the Jets' new Jets TV host and insider, will be joining us on the program, as will head coach Paul Maurice at 7 a.m. to break down camp and set it up for you, at least. What are you looking for in camp as well? And, of course, several rule changes to the Canadian Football League. The CFLPA and the CFL announced yesterday, including no more contact practices and another bye week in the schedule. What do you think of the extra bye week in a nine-team league?
Well, that, you know what, man, when you take into consideration, and I think it was five games over some ridiculous time frame, but also three games within 11 days for the Ottawa Redblacks. If they're not able to, to format the schedule in a way that completely avoids such a ridiculous toll and demand on your body, then I'm all for it. It sucks for fans because, you know, things get spread out a little bit more. And similar to this week, you have to endure your home team not playing away or at home, sort of thing. But by and large, from a player's safety standpoint, certainly that's a huge plus for the guys.
And the CFL plays two extra regular season games than the National Football League. However, there's also two fewer preseason games. But the preseason games in the NFL is a lot of guys that aren't playing in the regular season anyway. So it kind of offsets and balances out. So your thoughts on that coming up on the Boston Pizza Fan Line at 780-1290. You can also text us at 1290-90 if you want to weigh in on those conversations. And then we get into the news that from the perspective or from the people around and handling Johnny Manziel, he has let the Hamilton Tiger Cats know or exercise the option of them owning his rights that they have to sign him in the next 10 days. They don't have to trade or release him as per the rules, but they do have to either offer him a contract. Now, the way it works, from what we understand, is they can actually offer him the league minimum, and he doesn't have to sign it, but that will cover them retaining his rights. They don't have to trade or release Johnny Manziel, but they just have to offer him a contract. So it looks like Manziel's side is now pushing for something to happen in the CFL, whether it's with Hamilton or not.
Yeah, I'll tell you what. Look for Johnny Manziel to be at the very least in a camp come next year.
Interesting, eh?
Yeah, and if he's of the right mindset, look out. Like, if he's back and committed, look out.
Also, as we were just mentioning to you, the CFL and the CFLPA have agreed to get rid of contact practices in the CFL. Now, as Troy was saying earlier in the program, prior to this announcement, you were allowed to have contact padded practices 17 times in a season. The NFL allows you only 14 padded contact practices. The CFL now taking the step to move forward in the initiative of player safety to get rid of all contact practices. To talk about that and give us his opinions on it, we welcome back into the show Blue Bomber legend, CFL legend, and of course a big part of TSN 1290's Blue Bomber Manuk Dencher Game Day, Mr. Chris Walby. Mr. Walby, good morning. You golfed well yesterday, and we're wondering your thoughts on the CFL not allowing contact practices anymore.
You know what? I'm not a fan. I don't like it. I think it's ridiculous. I'm just going to cut it right to the point. I mean, I can understand that defensive backs and receivers and quarterbacks, they can do practice like that. They can run routes. They can cover. But I'm thinking about when you're trying to do a skelly or an offensive, you know, rundown where you got running backs, timings, offensive linemen. I'm even thinking to myself, offensive linemen, how am I going to get, if I don't have contact in practice, I mean, how am I going to get my technique? And I know I'm really, you know, going to be able to handle something. I don't get it. I mean, now they're saying they're just going to have padded practice in training camp. Why are you going to have it in training camp then? You might as well cut it right out. I mean, I'm telling you what, I'm a little disappointed because I really do empathize with the fact that, you know, you're trying to worry about player safety, but don't go on the air of so much caution. There's more injuries now than there were when we had that. I told Troy this a long time ago, man. In training camp, we used to be able to, you know, first couple of days, you get your body used to the contact, the technique, the timing. I could take a 2x4 after training camp, hit myself on the arm, I'd have no bruise because it was used to it. Nowadays, you're going to have guys going into full contact after not practicing full contact. I'm sorry, I don't think this is going to be a win-win.
Chris, it'll also be hard for teams if they want to bring in a D lineman or something like that mid-season. How in the world do you really look at him until the game?
You know, well, that's a great point. That's exactly. I had it written down. Some of the things that would drive me nuts, and that's it. I mean, you can look at a receiver; he can run his routes. Exactly the same thing. But now I get a defensive lineman or an O-lineman. How do I judge him? And then I'm going to throw him into the game, and you know, when the bullets are flying for real, and he ends up being just the worst thing I've ever done, and I get somebody killed. Maybe my quarterback gets killed because I put an O-lineman in who's never had a pad of practice, and now he gets in there and the real thing is going in, and some guy just beats the crap out of him. I don't know, man. This is, to me, I love the extended week. I love the three byes. I think that's great. That's smart. But this it's almost like we're saying we know we're going to have more injuries, so we're going to have a longer season now to let them get better. Jeez.
Thank you, Mr. Walby. I tend to agree with you on this matter wholeheartedly. I think that the limiting of it per year, like the 17, maybe even down to 12, the NFL does 14, but getting rid of it, it's going to be interesting to see how this plays out. Your thoughts on that coming up on the Boss Pizza Fan Line, 780-1290. Your thoughts on a six-year contract extension for the Winnipeg Jets center, Brian Little, with an average annual value of $5.291. Thanks, Mr. Walby. Your call's next on the Boss Pizza Fan Line, 780-1290 on The Big Show, TSN 1290.
This is The Big Show Podcast on TSN1290.ca. Catch The Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruwicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.
Back on The Big Show, TSN 1290, TSN1290.ca, and the Boston Pizza Fan Line is wide open, 780-1290, or text us your thoughts at 1290-90 with standard message rates applying. Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, Brandon Ruwicki with you. The Winnipeg Jets announced this morning they have extended center Brian Little to a six-year deal worth $31.75 million. That's an annual average value of $5.291 million, just over $500,000 more per than he was making currently at $4.7 million. Of course, this year he'll make $4.7 million, and that contract will kick in once he is 30, which he turns 30 in November. Your thoughts on the CFL changing their rules regarding contact practice? You're not allowed to do it anymore at all, along with the CFLPA, in order to create a better player safety. Also, Johnny Manziel has initiated the Hamilton Tiger Cats to minimal offer him a contract. And what you feel about that. And, of course, Jets training camp starts today with physicals being taken, and they'll hit the ice tomorrow at Bell MTS Iceplex. First on-ice session is at 9 a.m. And I want to mention this as well. Blue Bomber head coach Mike O'Shea, along with the other inductees, go into the Canadian Football Hall of Fame today or tonight. And congratulations to Mike O'Shea. Your thoughts on him going into the Hall of Fame, if you want to weigh in on that. And Mike Morreale, a former teammate of Mike O'Shea's, had this quote: "I think if you were going to build a mold of the ultimate teammate, it would be Mike O'Shea. There's just no other way to put it," speaking about his time playing with O'Shea as he goes into the Canadian Football Hall of Fame for his outstanding career as a linebacker in the CIS, as it was known, and now the Canadian Football League. 780-1290, we're lined up. Who kicks us off, Brandon?
We will get to Rowdy in the Netherlands in just a second, and nice. we'll start off with NER, but Darren Dreger, another big contract also reporting. David Pastrnak, 6 years, $40 million, 6.667 a year.
6 year, $40 million, 6.667 a year. It's a lot less than Dreisaitl.
It's a nice little contract. That's a good job by the Bruins, honestly.
You know what? As it played out, I thought this wasn't going to go well for the Bruins until they anteed up some Dreisaitl money. But yeah, that's pretty good at 6.667 for him. So lots to talk about on the Boss Pizza Fan Line. North End Rick, you're kicking us off today. Go ahead.
Hey, gentlemen. Surprised the Pastrnak term isn't eight, but I guess with the little bit of fighting that was going on there, maybe they couldn't do eight. Have to ask a question about the what is left now for Trouba. Now we've got you've got Little getting a little bit of a raise, and we know that the performance bonuses for Ehlers and Line A are roughly $2 million each, right? But wouldn't you think that there would be a performance bonus also for Kyle Connor?
You'd think so.
Yeah,
you would think. So would you not have to make sure that you had probably six, you know what I mean, free, just in case?
I don't think so.
I don't think the bonuses would be as high for Connors because he was a mid-first-round pick.
Sure, there's no way in the world they don't have
They're nowhere near what Ehlers or Laine would have got.
Okay, so maybe mil, if he was to reach all his performance bonuses, it might be a mil.
I would, Possibly. I would think Kyle Connor would have to score 30 goals this year, and even then it would maybe be 250K. I mean, Laine, when he reaches 20, 30, 40, gets 250K. So I wouldn't think Kyle Connor would get more than maybe 100.
Okay, so it's not that bad. I was just wondering what would have to be free for those guys, because I think that Connor will actually be very good this year. So I just needed to know what was available for Trouba now. You know what I mean? What was left there? So
well, this group,
I know you got a lot in the queue, so I'll listen to you guys.
Thanks, North End Rick. I guess it brings us full circle, gentlemen, to when at the end of last season we were talking about this, and I extend Brian Little. And I think to extend Trouba, and I think what you do is you lock up Laine to big deal, and you bridge Josh Morrissey, and you figure out a bridge which is going to be higher than usual for Nick Ehlers. I think that makes Matthew Perreault expandable at his 4.1 over the next four seasons. I just go back to that full circle conversation. I would keep Little, extend him, and I think even when we were talking that, we were talking 5 to 6. So that's what I do. I think after this season, you have to look at moving Matthew Perreault. And that's based on Trouba willing to sign. Like, Trouba might sit there and go, no, I'll go to arbitration, get a little bit more for the next 2 years, and then go to free agency. If that's the case, you can keep Perreault. But if you get Trouba locked up as well, I think you have to move Perreault.
We're not going to lock up Trouba. He will go bridge through arbitration. And isn't it something, a couple years ago, all kinds of cap space for the Jets, huh? Where's that gone? Goodbye.
Yeah. And, you know, right now, salaries committed for next year, the Jets have $28.4 million in cap space with Little's new deal. So you have to fit in Morrissey, Trouba, Ehlers, Armia, Lowry, and Dano into that cap space. Combine that with the year after, Patrick Laine's extension, and Blake Wheeler's a UFA.
I think you forgot Hellebuck.
Oh, yeah.
But I'll just add
there you go. Thanks. Yeah. Thanks, pal.
Yeah. So, I mean, but that's, don't you sort of see that coming? Like, the guys like Dano and stuff, unless they make a big mark, and this isn't a knock on him. It's just that those are the kind of guys that have to go by the wayside. Like, that's how Chicago does it. That's how it's the guys that, you know, are part of the team. But it's once you lock up that core, it's the pieces on the outside that you would probably like to keep but just can't that go to the wayside.
There's going to be an influx of ELCs. No question about that.
Thanks for the call, North End Rick. Your thoughts on it as well on the Boss Pizza fan line, 780-1290, if you want to weigh in on the conversation. Rowdy, you're on the program. Welcome back.
Hi, guys. Thank you very much for taking my call. It's been a while.
Yeah. How you been?
I've been good. How about you guys?
Very good.
Yeah, so I just wanted to touch on the Brian Little extension. I'm happy with it. I was afraid that he might have gotten more money than what he ultimately got out there, but he was he's key to this team. We saw it the first quarter of last season, how the team, well, not fell apart, but it didn't play well without him. You just couldn't afford to lose him, and I just think it's crucial to have him back.
I agree. I think that this is a different team when Brian Little's in the lineup compared to when it's out, and I mean, I guess a contentious issue is the length of it, but I think that's the price you pay to keep him, and it's a price, personally, I would pay.
I wonder now, are they looking, because some of the talk was you bring along Roslovic and he jumps into that two-hole, right? So, but I now wonder, like, is it Roslovic likely another year down with the Moose here come up? Will he be able to bring, like, a third-line center type thing, and does that eventually sift Adam Lowry down to a fourth line? You wonder what the plan is there.
Yeah. I don't think Roslovic was going to be on the team to start the year anyways, so I don't think much really changes there.
Not this year.
No, not this year. Right. But I don't know. I still, like, you're talking about a guy who's going to be 30 in November and a guy who has had two pretty significant injuries the past couple of seasons that he's missed 20 games in each of the past two and 10 the year prior to that. And part of the decline in the player is injuries. And you have to, I think, take that into consideration here and how much – like, this is – it's not a contract that hurts the team next year or 2 years from now.
Yep.
But is he going to be able to hold up, and not only hold up but produce at – you're basically asking him to get at least 50 – somewhere in that 55 to 60-point range if you're paying him that much.
And he's getting paid – or he's 0.77 points per game is what he's averaged the last 4 years, and you're talking about a guy turning 30 – who's only played 57 and 59 games the last 2 years. That has to be a concern.
Toby Enstrom comes off the books next year as well at $6 million. That frees up some cash there going forward. Well, 5.75 mil. I guess the hope is that you have somebody like a Pullman or somebody ready to step in there. I mean, there are options to do this, and I'll be the first to say that Kevin Cheveldayoff, the pieces he puts into this puzzle is always 2 or 3 years down the road in my mind. Like, he always puts this in sort of in the...
You have to be playing chess. You can't be playing checkers or everything's not going to go well.
Yeah. Boss Pizza Fan Line 780-1290. Thanks, Rowdy. Good to hear from you again. North End Rick, who's next?
Rocky.
Rocky, you're on the big show. Go ahead, sir.
Hey, fellas. Hey, don't you... do you find that, like, the term a little bit surprising? Like, I mean, for Brian Little, I mean, I know that, like, for a forward, he's going to be, what, 36, 37 when it's up? That seems, I mean, I know that we need him and all that, but that does seem a tad surprising to me. But the other thing that I find interesting was just the fact that we keep... And I know that they need to talk about the salary cap and plan that out years up and all that. But on paper, everyone's optimistic about the team and saying Chevy's done a great job. That hasn't come to fruition yet. So and we're pinning our hopes on that it does. And possibly rightly so, but until it actually bears fruit, then it's still hyperbole a little bit. So my question is, and do you find that it's interesting that we're already playing a shell game with the salary cap and having to play chess and whatnot when the results haven't been there? Like, we're not a Chicago in the past, we're not an LA that's won cups, that has to dump salaries. You know, the Jets we're already talking about that, and they haven't won a playoff game in their history yet. You know, we think that they will be, but they still haven't.
Well, I think what's changed there, Rocky, could we just get you to turn your radio down while you're on the air with us? It's just echoing a bit. Thank you, sir.
Everybody's in trouble with the cap.
I think what's changed with compared to how Chicago's done it, and then after having won and having to deal with it, is how the NHL in the past 3 years has gotten so young, and how the 22, 21-year-old players are now getting big money compared to when Chicago was winning three cups. And, you know, Taves got his money, Kane, but a lot of the other guys, just that shift to where the contracts have gone money-wise is a change in that. I didn't have this team in the playoffs last year. On paper, I do. I think your conversation is very valid if this roster doesn't make the playoffs this year.
The Jets have, of all the teams in the NHL, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, the 10th most cap space available to them. There's 20 teams with less cap space than the Jets, including just a host of teams, Minnesota, Calgary, like Nashville, all kinds of teams that have yet to hoist the cup and are still in pursuit of that. Everyone, for the most part, outside of teams like maybe Carolina and Arizona, are in the midst of really wrestling with the cap. It's for everybody.
You know what's interesting, too? We keep bringing up Chicago, but when Chicago did win their first cup and everything else, that's what Cheveldayoff's job with the team as assistant GM was, managing the cap.
Didn't Chicago make some really cutthroat moves in terms of saying bye to players that kind of in their peak? And now they've signed Seabrook to a big money deal. They've signed a bunch of guys, and people are picking them to miss the playoffs now.
Well, some people.
I'm just saying that, you know, those contracts have put them in the position where they're at right now. Mm-hmm. Whereas when they were winning cups, they were saying bye to guys like Brian Little. They said bye to Andrew Ladd and Dustin Byfuglien and Patrick Sharp. Like, a lot, like, they made a lot of moves that were probably unpopular, but they had to do to kind of set them up for success in the future. And now I would argue that some of the loyalty that they've shown, it's biting them in the ass right now. And they're kind of playing, this year at least, they're playing catch up.
But to Rocky's point is, do you mind it with three banners hanging there compared to the Jets having to bite it like maybe next year and nothing in the ceilings?
Right, my point is they weren't loyal before that.
Oh, okay.
So, and that's why they got two extra banners after the one that they originally got in 09. I think that's why they were able to have success for such a long period of time.
And really, if you look at this cap space right now for the Jets, that's kind of what they're doing here. They're like, they're not sitting here worried about 2 years from now so much as they are, like, they've put this roster together, and I think that, you know, it's clear to me it's win now.
Well, sure, but there's always the flip side of that, and what are people going to be saying in 2021-22, and there's that year and two more left on Brian Little's contract. Like, I understand that there's a give and take here. There's no question about it. This is the question for all kinds of organizations. What were the Jets going to do with the second line center? Where did they think Roslovic was for coming in and taking that spot? How much do they think Little's got left in the tank? And are you willing to eat 2 years in the back end of a contract when you think that player can give you the first three or four at a pretty solid level? It seems to me that's what they're doing. And I think when you're talking about, you know, potentially Brian Little would likely get a similar contract to this, maybe the exact term, out on the open market. So sometimes you have to enter into contracts. Like, there's the analytics community will feast on this contract, no question about it, because of the term. And you can't argue the points that they're going to be making. But are the Jets as an organization willing to absorb the final couple years of potential disappointment for what's ahead here in the next 3-4 years?
Is it not also a very tradable contract as well, though, for Brian Little, a second-line center in the National Hockey League for $5 million, basically?
I don't think so. If it's so tradable, then it's a good contract.
I think it's very tradable.
You'd be willing to trade for a 33-year-old center in a couple of years making 5.2?
If I was close, yeah. So if you're the Nashville Predators right now and you need a center, would you trade for a 32-year-old Brian Little at this price?
No.
If it fit for the Chicago Blackhawks, you don't think that they would trade for him?
The back end of it's brutal. No.
I think you would. If a second line center at $5 million in this league,
he's not going to likely be. Will he be a second line center in 4 years?
Mm-mm. Well, I'm talking two or three, but anyway, we'll get more to your calls and your thoughts on this contract and everything else on the Boss Pizza Fan Line when we return to the Big Show on TSN 1290.
This is the Big Show podcast on TSN 1290.ca. Catch the Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruwicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.
Back on the Boss Pizza Fan Line, 780-1290 on the Big Show, TSN 1290. Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, Brandon Ruwicki, and your calls. Tim, you're on the Big Show. Go ahead. Hi, Tim. Hello, Tim. No, Tim. We'll move on to Derek. Derek, you're on the Big Show. Go ahead.
Hi, good morning, boys.
Morning.
I got a couple points to make. For anyone that's worried about the cap, I'd just like to remind them that we got our top two centers at the price under Connor McDavid, so there's that. And then there's also Leon Draisaitl. So, like, anyone worrying about the cap, I think we're doing all right with that. Another thing I'd like to point out is, you know, for players not wanting to come here, they sure like staying here. And, you know, we got all our top guys staying, committing, and that looks pretty good.
I think that's why you have to overpay with term, though, with Little, though, right? You couldn't have kept Little here for a four-year deal, I bet.
But, I mean, like, on the open market, he would have got way more, don't you think?
Probably, yeah.
Yeah, I have no problem with this whatsoever.
You mean way more than he received in this deal? I don't think he would get way more than he received. Like, he's not going to get more term. And I think dollar value, because of the age involved, I think this is pretty reflective of what he would have got on the open market.
You don't think he would have got 6x6 as an unrestricted free agent? I for sure think he would have. This reminds me of the Dustin Byfuglien contract, where we're sitting here going 7.8 is too much. But we all forget that he was rumored to be looking at $8 to $9 million per for 6 years.
And yet when people talk about trading him, people say you can't trade him with that contract.
I think you can. I think somebody would trade for that. There's always a team. There is always a team.
No, there's not.
I believe that. But I specifically for Brian Little, I think it's a very tradable contract. I think it fits under the cap nicely. And
I mean, you don't sign someone to trade them eventually.
No.
Well, so, I mean, I don't really buy the tradable contract part of it.
Tag it as a...
So, if we don't have Rossovic on the roster this year, and even if he makes it next year, in 3 years from now, including this year, he's making league minimum as your second-line center, if he's that good. If not, he's a third-line center behind Little. To me, we're thinking about paying a third-line center $5 million 4 or 5 years from now. I don't look at it that way. I look at it, does it fit? To me, it's the same if you're starting goaltender, or if you have a goaltender making $7 million and you have a goaltender making $1 million, and the guy making $1 million starts. It doesn't matter. Does the $8 million fit? That's what matters. To me, it fits. It fits whether he's a second-line center. It fits whether if he's a third-line center.
It fits now, but we're talking a couple years from now when, I mean, even we all know who's coming up for contracts at the end of this season. Next year you'll have, I believe, Laine, Connor, and Wheeler, and Trouba, depending on what happens with Trouba or whoever comes back in that deal. What about 2 years from now when Blake Wheeler's coming up for a new deal and you're trying to lock up the captain and your cap space is basically zero?
Unfortunately, do you need Blake Wheeler 3 years from now?
Well, then that's the discussion. Do you want? Would you rather have Little or Wheeler locked up long term?
Well, that's the discussion. Do you have more scoring wingers on this roster coming up, or do you have more centers? What do you need more of? Would you rather have a center or that? And I'm not harping on Blake Wheeler, but 3 years from now, he's not going to be making $6 million. And if he wants to stay, he'll have to stay at that. And if he has to go, well, then Mark Scheifele is your next, and you have three centers. I would prefer centers than scoring wingers. I think you have more scoring wingers coming. And that's not a knock on Wheeler. I'm just saying, to me it fits. And 3 years from now, does it fit? And if things pan out the way they're planning with Rossovic and everybody else, it fits. It doesn't matter to me that he's making 5.21 on the third line. If you have a second line center, if you have Scheifele still making six, and he's your number one, and you have a second line guy making maybe, two to three, I think it fits.
I think it's real hard it's easy to say it fits looking at it right now. Projecting down the line when he's 34, 35 years old and you got a guy, whatever his production might be and however many games he's missing because of injury, if that starts coming into play as well.
And the other side of that is, what if Roslovic doesn't work out? What if Patan doesn't work out? Well, then you still have a decent second-line center who's a great two-way guy, very good defensively.
When does he lose a half a step?
I don't know. We're talking in this city about signing Yager, and he lost a half a step 2 years ago.
For a different role altogether.
I don't see him losing a step. I think he's very good defensively.
Think he's immortal?
I don't think he's immortal, but I think worry about it 4 years from now. Well, when you know what Rossovic is, when you know what Patan is, when you know where everything else plays out. What if Wheeler loses a step?
That's the cost, right? You're saying, I dare say Wheeler can afford to lose a step. That's the cost, though, when you're talking about... Right, a contract like this, you have him now, and he's going to play a massive role in the level of success of this team over the next couple of years.
Sorry, I'm getting excited. We got a break. But more of your calls when we come back on the Boss Pizza Fan Line, 780-1290 on The Big Show, TSN 1290.
This is The Big Show Podcast on TSN 1290.ca. Catch The Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruwicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.
Back on the Boss Pizza Fan Line, 780-1290 on the Big Show. TSN 1290, Jim Tolt, Troy Westwood, Brandon Rewicki, and your calls as we continue to dissect the six-year, $31.75 million extension for center Brian Little with the Winnipeg Jets. Training camp begins officially tomorrow, unofficially today with medicals. Big Show will be at Bell MTS Iceplex live from 6 to 11 a.m. tomorrow. Paul Maurice, Jamie Thomas, perhaps Craig Heisinger working on that, going to join us. It should be a great show. Back to the Boss Pizza Fan Line, 780-1290. Jeff, you're on the program. Go ahead.
Hey, guys. How's it going?
Good. How are you?
Good, good. A couple days ago, I heard you guys talking about which Canadian team you thought would be the first to win a Stanley Cup.
Yeah.
I was wondering what Canadian team you think has the best core group of young players. Like, do you think the Jets takes that hands down?
Personally, not hands down, but I think that's what the debate is revolved around. Is they each have such great young talent? Like their
cores. That is a different question, though. It's a different question he's asking. It's not who's going to go hoist the cup. Who's got the best young core? Hmm.
Yeah, wouldn't you have to say Winnipeg even over Toronto just because the Jets have forward defense and goalie?
Yes. Yes. But
Toronto doesn't have the goalie,
right? Or D,
not young and got, like Morgan Riley, like Jake Gardner's, I think 26 now.
Yeah, and Morgan Riley's there's a lot of question mark. Yeah. What's he gonna Zaitsev? Same sort of thing. And true, they don't have a Trouba. That's for dang sure.
Yeah, I guess if you're looking at the overall depth of core young talent,
might be a different question if Trouba's removed from the equation next year.
Yeah.
In all reality.
I don't know the depth of the Oilers, like their farm team.
Well, they got, I mean, I always forget that they have Jesse Puljujärvi still kind of waiting in the wings.
Yeah.
So that's always a nice thing to think about, too, because when's the last time the Oilers had a Finnish winger to go along with a Canadian superstar center?
Brian, jerks. Does that answer your question, Jeff? You think it's the Jets?
Because okay. He's gone.
Awesome. Thank you. This just coming, Brian Little is speaking to media right now. And quote on his term, I think the one thing I said I wanted to sign a longer-term deal, I knew I could play longer, and I wanted to stay in Winnipeg. That's from Jamie Thomas, Jets Insider, who's covering that, as well as our TSN 1290 team. Back to the Boss Pizza Fan Line, 780-1290. Bryce, you're on the Big Show. Go ahead.
Hey, how's it going?
Good. How are you?
I'm doing well. So, Jim, you and I are discussing on Twitter right now.
Okay. This is Bryce from Twitter.
Yeah. So, I don't know. I just don't really see how. Like, imagine if we would have given Shifley a bridge deal.
You don't have to bridge Shifley at all. You didn't have to bridge him back then. Ehlers, you now have to bridge, and he has no options. So you bridge Ehlers, and in 2 to 3 years when that bridge deal is up, yes, you pay him more because you have more guys coming off the books.
But, I mean, it seems kind of ridiculous to me that if we wouldn't re-sign Little for this much term and money, perhaps we wouldn't have had to bridge Ehlers. I still don't think we have to.
This is the question I don't understand, Bryce, is why do you not want to bridge Ehlers?
Because Ehlers doesn't want to be bridged, probably.
Well, yeah, but he has no options.
Well,
he's in the same boat as Jacob
Trouba.
Happy,
don't you? You can say that about every single young talent in the league, JT. You don't have to long-term any of them. You can bridge them all. It ain't happening.
I think it is. I think he is getting bridged.
He is, but it ain't happening. It's not the trend in the league right now.
Oh, no, I understand that. But, like, to Bryce, your point of could you imagine bridging Shifley? You didn't have to bridge him back then, so why would you?
Ehlers is going to be a real hard bridge. You're going to get a guy, Ehlers, if he's healthy, somewhere between 70 and 80 points.
Well, and I think to Bryce's point, you signed Shifley to that long-term deal to keep that overall cap dollar down.
Yeah.
So if you bridged him before the contract, I know you didn't have to, but let's say you did.
Night and day.
What's that number going to be on a new contract?
That's what I'm saying. He's saying, like, why are you bridging Ehlers? Could you imagine bridging Shifley? And I'm like, no, I can't imagine that. I do that deal 1,000 times out of 1,000 with
Shifley.
So
wouldn't that be the same with Ehlers, though? If you could get Ehlers to a contract similar
because
to Pat.
Sit down.
Well, no, but just if you could get Ehlers to a contract similar to Pasternak's, 6 years, $40 million, wouldn't that be more palatable than if he explodes and you have to pay him Dreisaitl money?
Yes.
Well, here's a prime example. Enstrom's off the books next year.
So you have all this stuff to do. Yeah, I mean, if you can get him to that deal, why wouldn't you? It doesn't fit because of Brian Little's contract. And if it doesn't, that goes back to my original theory months ago. Bye-bye, Matthew Perreault. There are teams that would want him. There are teams that want him at 4.1. Somebody has to go. It's not Ehlers. And it's not Ehlers not getting his money. It's Matthew Perreault. That's why I always come back to somebody has to go. Of the two, you sign, in my opinion, you sign Little and you trade Perreault.
But that's, I don't know, if you're really answering the question. This is about if you bridge or give a long-term deal to Ehlers.
Bryce, are you still there?
No.
Well, I think you...
I don't think you're going to have really the option. You don't want to... I don't think you want to dare bridge Ehlers, man.
And I don't understand why it's a debate because I don't think it doesn't not fit. Like, I bridge him if you have to, but I'm not saying you bridge him. I'm saying if it doesn't fit, that's the option. You sit down with him and go, I'll give you $3 million per for 2 years.
Well, you're going to eat it. You're going to eat it in an orifice of your body you don't want to eat it in. 2 years, if you give him a two-year bridge, JT, and after those 2 years, now you're dealing with something super hot that you got to give a massive contract to. Like, that's why you have to make it fit. That's why you can't bridge him.
Well, back to my original point then. Bye-bye, Matthew Perreault.
Yeah, well, hey, whatever it takes.
Like, what are your guys' options with it then, if you're not bridging him? Who goes?
Well, that's a different question. The fact of the matter is, as an organization, you don't want to bridge a talent like Nikolaj Ehlers. Line A, like all these guys that are, they're just on the cusp of exploding. If you can get them to a long-term dollar amount that you can take now, like you have to do whatever you can. You have to maneuver the salary cap and all your personnel so that you can do that.
Fair enough. To Bryce's point, then, you're not bridging Ehlers. The next fallout of that is who goes.
Fair.
Yeah, and yeah, pros. I don't even know if there's anyone else you can look at it saying who moves.
Okay.
In terms of the forward rank. We're not disagreeing with you there.
No, I'm not saying you guys are. I'm just, to Bryce's point, he's saying, like, you can't bridge Ehlers. I'm like, fine, you don't have it. To me, it's not a concern. Would I like to keep Perreault? For sure, but that's the contract to me that, with the extension and everything else that's going forward, in the discussion with Bryce. Bryce, thanks for the call. We appreciate it. Boss Pizza Fan Line, 780-1290. Jay, you're on the program. Go ahead.
How you doing, guys?
Good. How are you?
Good. I'd really happy with the Little signing. I would have preferred if it was more like 4 or 5 years instead of the 6, for many of the reasons you guys have been talking about. But reading what Gregor just said, that his no trade kicks in only for the first 2 years, and then it's I think it's half the league or whatever.
14 team limited no trade.
Yeah, so he's movable, and I think if a team was at the trade deadline, was making a run, and the Jets are willing to part with him if they had to or something, a team would take a jump on him. But, I mean, so that's not that bad, but I've been saying for 6 months now that if the Jets were to sign Little, it confirms that Trouba wants out. Because if you do the math of all the guys we have to sign, if you sign Trouba, there wouldn't be money left over for Little. So, and your whole idea of the Ehlers signing a bridge, the only way that would happen is if he had an off year this year and he took a small step back. Then they could probably convince their camp, Ehlers camp, that, yeah, a bridge deal might suit him more to prove he's where he wants to be and get a bigger contract. If he puts up 65-plus points again, there's no way he's going to take a bridge deal. No chance. He's going to want 6 to 8 years.
And you as a team want to give him that, yeah.
Well, here, let's look at Pastrnak and Draisaitl then. What are you going to do?
Well, they sign him to long-term.
They sign the Ehlers to, what, 8? You got to keep in mind that Line A's going to get one for 10 or 12. So, like, you're doing what the Bruins did and you're doing what the Oilers did. So that's how it fits, right? Is you move somebody.
If that's what you're saying, yep. Of course you have to move somebody. You have to move people to keep that young, the young upper end impossible to acquire outside of the draft talent. You have to do whatever you can to maintain that, and you get long-term lowest dollar possible because of the long-term, the whole way that whole relationship exists with term and dollar. You have to take advantage of that as an organization.
Are you bridging Morrissey?
It's a real good question.
Like, somebody has to get bridged, or else somebody has to go. More than one guy.
Morrissey, there's a little bit less upside that you're dealing with, right? If you're talking about a guy that's going to be firmly planted in your 3-4, although like alongside a pairing right now of Jacob Trouba, and if Morrissey has, and I still think his year last year is kind of undervalued and understated, if he's out there and just plays as brilliantly solid as he did last year, I don't know how you keep making the debate even that he's a 3-4 guy if he's in your top pair complementing your top defenseman.
It's really hard to say exactly what the Jets will do because the next domino here is Jacob Trouba. It's that simple. Yeah. You can't even try and decipher what you can do because you have a potential $7 million, like even if you just want to keep it at $7 million per season for Trouba, like something you're dealing with that potential cap hit over a long-term deal or what you're getting back in a trade, which is completely unknown right now.
And I guess my discussion with Bryce isn't Ehlers the bridge, but somebody's getting bridged. And it might be Trouba for another 2 years. Like, that might be the bridge. But the bridges are there in place, and I wholeheartedly agree with you guys on Ehlers, especially if you get them to Shifley money. But I think that somebody's getting bridged or more than one guy is going.
Trouba's going to get bridged.
I think Morrissey might get bridged, too, if it's not. Anyway, back to the Boss Pizza fan line, 780-1290. Thanks, Jay, for the phone call. Mike, you're on the program. Go ahead.
Gentlemen, the question I want to ask is, what do you define as the Jets' winning window? I look out 5 years, so the end of this year is 18. So 18, 19, 20, 21, 22. What do you define as, in Cheveldayoff's mind, his winning window? And I mean winning a cup or being a serious Nashville-like contender.
I think it's this very day to as long as he can manage everything that's going on.
It's not this day, Troy. I mean, 18 is not a realistic year, so you're not going to be spending money, in my opinion. You need to line up all of the dominoes, the cash you have, the chips you have.
He doesn't have any money to spend this year. Well, so it is this year. It's the next 3 to 5 starting this year.
I don't know if your expectations are for them to make the playoffs and make some noise, and with the way they're situated right now with their contracts and their young talent and all the rest of it, I don't know how you dismiss the potential for them to be our window and include this year.
But let me be clear. I'm talking about winning a cup, and so you're saying, Troy, sooner than later, which I agree. So let's say a 3-year window, 19-20-21. And I'm not denying they're going to make the playoffs. I hope they have a fantastic year in 18. But let's say that's their prime window. So when we talk about term, when we talk about what are we doing with a Trouba or an Ehlers, et cetera, my opinion is what Cheveldayoff needs to be doing and is trying to do is line up the assets. So, for instance, to my point, I don't think he went out and bought the goaltender that he thinks is going to take this club to the promised land. He bought a goaltender that's serviceable and will hopefully get us into the playoffs, but he's not buying us a goaltender that I think he believes will win a cup. That's somebody either in the system or outside of the system, like a Halawa, Comrie, or to be determined.
Fair.
So having said that, I look at the little contract. I like the $5 bucks. You know, I don't know whether he would have accepted five or less. So six seems long, but he's a loyal guy. That seems consistent with the culture of the team. I have no great problem. My issues really are, you mentioned a Matthew Perreault. I feel like in our top six, who are going to be the Connor Sherrys, the Jake Guentzels, because I think the winning models that we see today, and it is a copycat league, are in Chicago and Pittsburgh, and it's a combination of three things, in my opinion. I'll say four, because you always need to have defense and goaltending, but you need to have star players on bargain contracts. So a Duncan Keith or other player, and we have that in a Mark Scheifele.
Yep.
You need to have young talent, whether it's a Sherry or Guentzel, and I think they could have that in Roslovic, Connor, and to be determined. And then the third element is you need to get performance out of superstar before you pay through the roof. Now, Pittsburgh has successfully won, despite the fact that they have two of the highest contracts in the league, Malkin and Crosby, but I just don't think that's sustainable. So we know that Chicago won primarily before they paid Kane and before they paid Toews. So that's why I say a three-year window. Before we pay through the nose for Eleni, Ehlers, and whomever else is coming through the pipe, maybe a Trouba.
You know, can I say the only thing that's changed from the Pittsburgh and the Chicago models is that those stars got paid on their third contract. Now guys are getting paid on their second contract. So that whole thing changes the landscape, really, right?
So Chevy has to win on just about, and again, if we believe, and I really hate this, but I'll accept it as a fact, if we believe that Winnipeg is not the most desirable market in the league, so you have fewer players you want to play, or you have to pay a premium for Winnipeg, that simply means that Chevy has to win on almost every contract he has. And while I'm not a fan of the result, and you've heard that before, when I look at the individual contracts, with the exception of Byfuglien, who might be our Dion Phaneuf in a few years' time, he's done exceptionally well. I have little criticism of what he's done on an individual contract basis.
Okay, Mike, we got to go. I'm sorry we're up against the clock, but I appreciate the call and your thoughts, man.
And agree 100% with that final point you make. For the Jets to hoist the cup, Chevy has to be brilliant.
Back on the Big Show, TSN 1290 next.
This is the Big Show podcast on TSN 1290.ca. Catch the Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.
Back on the Boss Pizza Fan Line, 780-1290, getting more of your calls in with Jim, Troy, and Brandon. Mark, you're on the Big Show. Go ahead. Hi, Mark. Okay, let's go to Mike. Mike, you're on the Big Show. Go ahead.
Morning, boys.
Morning.
Hey, I think for salary cap, 3-3 is the guy that's going to be moved. Mm. I just think that the dollar value and to sign Trouba and Morrissey, they're going to want 3-3's number.
If Trouba doesn't want to be here,
yeah,
they ain't going to move 3-3.
Brandon's right. Like, the whole key to all of this is obviously they're going to sign Trouba if he wants to sign an $8 or $9 million extension. If he doesn't, it just allows all these other options.
Well, options, and you're also crapping your pants wanting to somehow replace that. Like, if the Jets lose that, like, if they do end up losing Trouba in the next couple of years and all that, like, however it works out, how Chevy has to maneuver and manage that loss to fill the void that it creates that's going to be remarkable. But I think it's a very strong point. Like, the relationship with Trouba being here, like, that whole thing comes into a big play when you're looking at 7.6. But I spoke to someone last year who said that they felt that, and this is someone who was involved in the NHL and with coaches and management, and said that they didn't think Byfuglien's contract was movable with his age and such.
We're out of time. Great stuff. We'll talk about this on the Boss Pizza Fan Line again tomorrow, of course, as Jets training camp gets underway. The Big Show will be live at Bell MTS Iceplex from 6 a.m. right through till 11 a.m. Paul Maurice is going to join us. Jamie Thomas is going to join us. Much more on this contract extension as well throughout the day here on TSN 1290. We leave you with two tickets to the Manitoba Bison's homecoming football game Saturday, 1 p.m. at Investors Group Field versus the Calgary Dinos. 780-1290, 12th caller through gets those. On behalf of Troy Westwood, Brandon Rowicki, and myself, Jim Toth, the Big Show will be back tomorrow morning live at Bell MTS Iceplex for Jets training camp at 6 a.m. on TSN 1290.
This is the Big Show podcast on TSN 1290.ca. Catch the Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Rowicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.